themselves in either procurement or contract development, which is completed at all of the provinces, as well as training of contractors, was conducted in 9 provinces where the recipient of such training, which focused on identified areas of gaps that contractors said that they were requiring, along the lines of business management or financial management as examples. These were extended to contractors through partner agreements with service providers that were put on board. Also, what we call catalytic projects, 7 provinces undertook these, and these are seen to be supportive of client officials where we at LEV put some funding behind assisting clients in drafting their contract development programs and monitoring the rollout of their development programs, and we were able to act proactively in 7 of the provinces on those catalytic projects. So in terms of growth and contract development, we believe that we've got the summary framework, we've trained and capacitated the officials to roll it out, we've come up with guidelines, we've trained contractors, we've made good progress in that regard. The other aspect of contractor development unit is to ensure and oversee the provincial CIDB offices, the construction contact centers, or the footprint of CIDB in the provinces. And here we offer first-hand a registration service as well as other support services like contractor development and procurement support. But when it comes to looking at in the last financial year, specifically the stats on registration, where we had targets of 90% compliance, we met and exceeded those to a level of 93.8%. The average for the year in terms of 48-hour turnaround times, that's where a contractor at a grade 1 level walks into a center. Previously, we just assessed those within 21 days. We put in place a 48-hour turnaround time, and we met the target of 95% and exceeded it to 96.6% as average over the year. That's over-the-counter 48-hour turnaround times at grade 1 registration. And then in terms of compliance applications, to ensure that those were received, met the target of 90%. Here we exceeded that in terms of the set target to 92.3% as an average over the year in terms of the compliance application processes. When we look at monitoring the environment, our construction industry performance unit is custodian of that specifically. There are a host of analysis that are done in the industry to look at and monitor industry performance and also to make some critical recommendations perhaps in terms of where certain gaps might exist or where we need to focus our attention in terms of this industry analysis. So the construction industry indicators were published and communicated extensively. The findings of those indicators predominantly say that there's a low rate and depth of transformation. I think there's nothing new to any of us. But clearly the rate and the pace and the depth of transformation has not been at the levels we have set as preset targets. Economic conditions may play a role in this, yes, but also perhaps the slow rate of public sector spend is a key issue in terms of why we are not seeing transformation at the levels and depth we'd like to see. In this regard as well, in this financial year as an example, the Minister of Public Works has convened all the entities to have a transformation summit to unpack the type of issues. And it's industry performance information such as this, which will inform the various papers and discussions at the industry summit, and that's happening in November this year. The quarterly monitor, which we are required to assess the industry and publish, was done and complied with, and it looked at basically the state of industry development. Also, what was done was a small or medium enterprise survey, and again, these were published in terms of the requirements. And communication sessions were held in 4 of the provinces in terms of the various stats analysis and industry information. On the skills delivery pipeline, aside from research work that was done on artisan and skills development, the ESDA is mentioned in our annual report as an employment skills development agency, and progress of the CIDB has made in that regard. Also, a postgraduate conference was held within the financial year. From a procurement and delivery management perspective, this unit looks at, yes, the regulation of the registration criteria, but also the procurement environment that clients look at or undertake. So we offer support in terms of procurement reform. Public sector clients were trained in all of the provinces. This is an outreach campaign and capacitation of from the municipal level, high, medium, low capacity municipalities, the provincial departments, and national departments, and this was completed in the financial year. And from a compliance and regulation enforcement perspective, we also conducted an audit blitz, and in terms of that audit blitz, hearings of non-compliance were conducted with various client organizations. An anti-corruption strategy was also developed, and the implementation of that is currently happening in this financial year. Also from a delivery management perspective, the infrastructure delivery improvement toolkit, which is done in partnership with National Treasury, was adopted, and evaluation was carried out thereon. Training was undertaken in all provinces on the infrastructure delivery management toolkit, and evaluation impact of the pilot program in terms of a gateway system at various checkpoints in the procurement processes was undertaken and completed. And coincidentally, that IDMS, as we call it, the Infrastructure Delivery Management Toolkit, has also been adopted at provincial levels, and we're seeing 10 departments now embracing these and using it as their management tool for infrastructure delivery, not just in public works, but right across the various client departments we've made that impact. From a construction registration service perspective, this was one of our founding core units that looked at the registration criteria. Here, grade 2 to 9 applications are spoke to grade 1 application being done at the provincial offices within 48 hours. The 2 to 9 applications are still done at head office, and we are exploring levels of decentralization so we can actually offer that service to varying levels at the provinces. But in the last financial year, our compliance target was 21-day turnaround times, which were all met. And Chair, if I could then hand over to our CFO, because I've covered the core components of performance, and she'll take us through the financial performance and the AG report and some of those issues that are contained therein. Thanks, Chair. Over to you then, anyway.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, the Chairperson of the CID Board and my fellow colleagues, I'll be presenting the financial performance as well as the AG report for the period 2011-12. In terms of the structure of the presentation, I'll deal with the financial performance, which will look at the financials in terms of our position at the end of the financial year, followed by the results or the closeout report of the Auditor General and the corrective action plan that we have since put in place at the CIDB. The next slide then looks at our close of reports in terms of financial matters at the end of the financial year, which reflects a saving of about 2 million at the end of the financial year. I will then deal with the specific variances in terms of the outcomes of the financial report in the following few slides. The next slide then looks at revenue. From the money that we get from a government grant, it had increased by 3.6% from 63 million in the previous year to 65.9 million in the year under review. And then revenue that we get from registers, because almost half of our revenue that we had at the CIDB were raised from the monies that we get from the registration from contractors, that increased by 5.9% from the previous year, which then reflected 47.7 as compared to 45 million that we closed with in the previous financial year. Mm-hmm. With respect to total expenditure, that increased by less than 2% compared with that of the previous year. So there was very minimal a move insofar as that is concerned. The next slide then looks at finance income. That increased by 11% from the previous year, from 4.1 million to 4.6. And then in terms of the end of year figures, we closed with a surplus of 6 million, but that includes the non-cash items of 4.5 million. And then with the cash and cash equivalents, those remained average at the end of the year when compared with those of the previous year. There was a very minimal decrease of less than 1%. With the accounts payable as well as accounts received in advance, total payables increased by 1.2 million from the previous year, and then income received in advance increased by 1.2 million to 27 from 26. Honourable Chair, there is an error that I picked up, and I apologise for that. The income received did not actually increase by 1.2 as opposed to decrease. I'm sorry about that. And then going to the audit report of the Auditor General, as mentioned, the CIDB received an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General with two matters of emphasis. and those matters related to the restatement of corresponding figures from the previous financial year, which amounted to about 456,000, as well as irregular expenditure that was picked up when we were audited. And that's related to irregularities in our supply chain of about 11.7 million. With respect to the first item, the restatement of corresponding figures, these were as a result of erroneous disclosures of the provision for debt impairment that was discovered during the audit of 2011-12, but it related to the closing figures of the previous year. The second item relating to irregular expenditure of 11.7 million, I've basically categorized that into two sections. The first section deals with irregular expenditure that is not necessarily recoverable, and I'll explain, to a tune of 3.9 million. The first one related to a lease that was not initially approved by the National Treasury, because CIDB entered into a 5-year lease, as opposed to legislation which allows us to enter into 3-year leases. That was then later condoned by the Treasury. And then there were also transactions where notice was given to Treasury and where notice was not necessarily given to Treasury and the AG on particular transactions. And so far as that is concerned, our investigation, we have since issued warnings insofar as the officials that were concerned with those particular transactions, there were no losses incurred. And then lastly, there were contracts that were extended in terms of their time frame, which related to old tenders of about 1.9 million, so that then culminated to irregular expenditure. The second section of irregular expenditure is what we are busy investigating currently, which totals an amount of 7.8 million. They're related to three kinds of irregular expenditure. The first one is transactions that were procured without following the necessary open tender or procurement processes to a tune of 1.5 million, which we are investigating. And then the second one, it was related to transactions that were procured without obtaining the necessary valid and original tax clearance certificates to a tune of 3.7 million. And lastly, there were bids that were awarded with clerical errors to a tune of 2.5 million. And then, over and above the issue of letters of emphasis, the AG has obviously raised a number of issues in the management letter for the 2011-12 financial year. As CIDB, in response to issues that have been raised in the management letter, we have since developed a corrective action plan to actually monitor the issues that were raised in the management report. And that corrective action plan actually sets down the timeline within which issues will be resolved, obviously depending on the nature of the issue that has been raised, who the responsible official is to resolve that particular issue, as well as the specific action that will be taken to resolve the issue. And monitoring of the CAP pool is then done by the CEO, the audit committee, as well as the board, where we report in terms of progress that have been made towards actioning the items, the findings that are in the management report. Over and above the CAP tool, the AG has also developed what is called a dashboard document, which actually lists key control measures that the CIDB must take care of during the course of this financial year, so that we avoid any others' opinion going forward. And to monitor the progress on the implementation of the commitments that are made in the dashboard report, we then have regular meetings with the AG, the CEO, and then the CFO. The progress is assessed with the AG, and those are obviously monitored on a regular basis. We also engage the internal audit unit, who also assists us with follow-up on the audit matters as raised by the AG in their management report. The next few slides actually give further detail on issues that were raised in the management report. And through your permission, Chair, I will not necessarily go through, but I will be happy to deal with specific questions that then emanate from those specific issues in terms of the management report. But on the overall, I think what I'd like to say, it's my second week at the CIDB, but we are issues of the Auditor General are issues that we are putting as priority on the radar in terms of ensuring that we address issues that were raised. Because my focus is actually to look at the root causes of some of these issues that were raised, so that when we put measures in place to address and avert such occurrences in future, we make sure that we actually tackle the root of the problem as opposed to just dealing with the matters at face value. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Chairperson, are there any additions?
No, there are no additions. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you very much. Honourable Members, that's the report. Honourable Mandopa, you'll be followed by Mandopa, Vitole, Swati, Mama Mashala, Babagila, that order, and then so after Babagila, Mama Mina.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the presenters. Honorable Chair, one is raising a great concern around this target that has been set, because they are so ambiguous when you look at the performance target in the whole list of the performance plan, annual performance plan. Chair, I want to talk to page 18. There is an indication on the last one, the target of the 9 provincial and 1 national offshore workshop. Here, the achievement, they said the national contractor development workshop held, but there is no talk to the planned target of 9 provinces, where they were and the state-owned enterprises where they were supposed to do the roadshow. We don't know whether they did achieve that one. It doesn't talk to that. And then on page 19, second target, there is no performance there. I don't know what happened. They said presentation on awareness as a target, but there is no there is nothing that talks to the performance on that one. And then also, can we get the guidelines promoted to the contractor development in the provinces? Because they said they do have that one, although they are not showing the achievement, and there is no reason also of not telling us why they did not achieve that particular target. The second one is about the voters. Also, we can request the advice voters if we can get the copies of it. And the last one on the page is the achievement of 96%. We don't know 96% of what number, because you can't just come up with a percentage without a number. Here they talk about the target was 95 compliant. They have achieved 96. We don't know 96 of what. If they can clarify that one, even on the second page, page 20, it's the same thing of the percentage without the number. On the second last, on page 20, how many staff members were trained per province? And which areas were staff trained on? Because we are told that they just achieved the target, they were saying that 2 areas of training, but we don't know which areas, and we don't know the number of staff that have been trained, if they can clarify. Page 21, there is no target, but there is an achievement. That's why I'm saying this is a very ambiguous report, Honorable Chair. If you look at that one, there is no target, but they said they have achieved something. I don't know out of what, because there is nothing under target. On the page 22, the last one, Chair, they said four provincial outreach communication session, by March 23rd, they said they have achieved. We want to know which 4 provinces where outreach communication session took place. It's not just 4. And then they were saying everything was achieved. And then 23rd, there is a 2 framework submitted board by March 2012 as a target. And then there is another one on at the bottom that says two frameworks submitted, but the other one is partially achieved and the other one is not achieved. If they can clarify the difference between the first framework that was not achieved and the one that has been achieved, before
you
see the contradictions there.
Thank you, we'll come for this
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, we must check with the FNTP for the presentation. But Chairman is on page 39, creating by provinces. If you can check that on Chair, Northwest, there was nothing that is upgraded on grade 9. There's nothing, so we can get the reason why there's no operating on Northwestern Northern Cape. There's nothing on Northern Cape on Great Asian Grade 9. There's nothing checked. And Chair, another one on page 49. On page 49, the statement says on the second paragraph on the last it says the paper will be developed and table at MIGMAC in early 2012-13. But according to what they say, they have already developed the paper. But here they say the paper will be developed. So we switch, because they have to tell us exactly what happened. And another chair, our concern chair is that the creation of grade 1, we have a huge number of creating in all provinces on grade 1. But other grades, there is nothing that is happening. There is no movement. What I want to find out is the candidates that they do have and what is happening to those grades. Nothing that is happening. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. My first question is with regard to a slide on growth and contractor development, where it actually indicated it was stated that provincial contractors were trained in all 9 provinces. I just want to know how many contractors were trained in those 9 provinces. That's my first question. And my second one is on performance plan, page number 26, where it actually indicating that you developed a draft framework of an action plan for the municipal toolkit. And the draft framework action plan for the municipal toolkit was to be completed by 31 July 2011. And the target was not achieved, yes. And then also my instruction received from National Treasury to develop the framework and action plan. So I just want to find out what is happening here so that I can get clarity. And my second one is on page 30, my third one, page 30. And a report on maintenance arrangements, March 2012, and quarterly maintenance reports from April 2012. Here, the target also was not achieved, and the software implementation has been further postponed to 1 August 2012. The maintenance, and then here I just want to find out as whether you have already started on the 1st of August, because we just passed that. And then another one is on page 31, on the electronic document management system. It is also the target was not actually achieved. And then also, I just want to know exactly what is actually happening here. And my last one is with regards to the Auditor General's report in terms of the leadership. It is saying that leadership, according to page 89, the accounting authority did not exercise effective oversight in ensuring that the planning and monitoring of performance information were aligned to National Treasury's framework for managing program performance. So I just want to know if really the leadership is actually exercising its power or doing its work where the public can actually realize the value for the money that they've been spending. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Sergeant, Honorable Marana. Thank you, Chairperson, my first question is on the delay in finalization
of the regulations, they are saying that they are in the process of advertising. Now, approximately when is that regulation going to come forward? Because now we are, as politicians, we are nearing the end of our term. My second question, Honourable Mandela touched on that, about the municipality toolkit. What is the real, or if Honourable Swade, what is the real delay? Because we expect this toolkit to be finalized, it's finalized already. What is the real delay? What delays that exactly? Also, the provincial outreach communication, which Honourable Mandela has that only four provinces. Which are those provinces, and why not others? And the on the financial statement, I see here the corrective action plan. But I'm worried here because they are having these challenges. But I don't see anything saying about the quarterly or half yearly financial statement from the internal audit. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mama. Honorable Mwana.
My first question was around the training of the contractors and at provincial level. I don't know how many contractors attended who would like to have that information. How many attended at what level? And then also on the agents report, my colleagues have touched on that of the accounting officer to not take effective steps as to prevent irregular and wasteful expenditure as required by PMA. But and the root cause of that is the lack of effective oversight and monitoring by leadership and lack of disciplinary action against transgressors. So, and I would like to know from the team as to when they think they can do the turnaround of it. And out of the findings, the goods and services of transaction value above 500,000 were procured without inviting competitive bids as required by Treasury and Treasury regulations. So when do you think, when can we expect a real result out of this 8 years report?
Thank you. I think one of my colleagues covered me. You know, chairperson of the board, you cannot use setting targets of what has been linked to the report. I think that in future, tell us what are your targets, not the targets achieved of what. So I think one of my colleagues covered me on the topic. Then the public sector training, which is conducted in all compliance departments, all the provinces. What about municipalities? And what system have you got in place to, I would say, discipline municipalities that don't adhere to it? Because we got quite a lot of those cases where these regulations are not followed, especially at municipality level. Then there are regulations, the amendment, I think they are signed by the minister, according to my information. When do you think, when can you publish those? So it's very important. When will you be able to publish them? Low rate of transformation, I think we all aware of that. But what Chairperson, I think in all the previous presentations has been there, one needs to know what can we do to change that. What is important is what can be done to change this low rate of transformation, because it's been there
And what we need to be, what plans they look for to address that. Then the issue of grade one, have you resolved it? Because I think last time you said you have resolved, you wanted to do away with them. And in doing away with them, what did you come up with? And also the issue of grade twos, because you end up getting a whole lot of grade twos, because everybody will go to grade two. But my problem there is the contract amount, $650,000. You know, let us be practical about this issue. Which department nowadays issued a contract of $650,000? Let us be practical about it. So, one is you to look at that. I know you, a person was really positive, passionate about the consulting. That we need to look at that. That at least you come up with something that's going to take our people some. You know. Of course, then you need to be strong. The guys want to enter the consulting industry, because what I've learned is that people think the consulting industry is there to make quick money. You know, get a retired nurse or whichever thing, you know. I'm going to make money there, and that is not the case. You know? So then one needs you to come up with something. Then the postgraduate conference held on skills delivery artisans. We're sitting in a temple. When these stadiums were built, most of your artisans came from Mozambique and Angola and all that. That is the truth. Now, we're sitting on a time bomb with youth that need employment, and employment has been given to somebody else because they haven't got these skills here. Now, what I would suggest here, and I've spoken to you about this, some of the things that were done in the past were very good, whereby when you issue a contract to a project or contractor, whereby you have a policy that you will take so many actions, let us see. But that policy must be able to trace and monitor. That's where your sister will come in. We need to get work for this youth, and we need to get them skills as soon as tomorrow. So one would like you to be proactive and say, you look at the boycott, you look at the strike, you sit unemployed youth. So I'm pleading with you, come up with something and give it to your principal, which is the Department of Public Works. Because sitting with this youth, they're unemployed. Students can attend and so and so and so and so. Also with that, engineers different things. You know, I once gave a young guy and left in my place. I'm saying the blue. I know it's not easy to get there. And when I chatted to him, he said, no, 3 years, I'm not employed, but I got this certificate, engineer certificate. I don't know what to do. I think I have heard that young person CPE. I never got a feedback. So, what I would do if I was the power that would be is to get all these youth at a proper skills audit, get them on a pattern, know that you got so many students and so and so and so and so, but I think that is something that you need to work on, Shakers, because we are really, 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 really good. I mean, you look at your engineers, your architects, those are all skilled people. But some of them don't want to change, they don't want to transfer skills. So we need to do something here, Chief. But those are the few comments that I have. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to page 39, that table 7, grading by province. I think my colleague here on my left also referred to that. It's interesting to see the spread amongst provinces. KwaZulu-Natal has got the highest number of gradings by far, more than double the next one, except Gauteng. Gauteng is also is the highest, but then there's the explanation at the bottom of the table showing that Gauteng province displays the highest number of registrations at higher grade because of the larger contractors established their headquarters in the Gauteng province. But they operate nationally and internationally, so that is we understand that. But then the next one is KZN, 3,160. And the next province after that is only 1,200 and something. So it's you know, a huge gap. I want to know, what is the reason for this exceptionally high number of ratings in KwaZulu-Natal? Why are there so many there, more than in the other provinces? And can you give us a breakdown of the companies and the products that they were involved in KwaZulu-Natal? Then I turn to page 62, table 11, outcome of disciplinary hearings. You give us, you know, so many hearings all together, 50, and some were acquitted, and others were unfounded, and some were withdrawn. And then there was some just finalized at 31 March 21, and others are still pending. But we don't actually have no cases been finalized during this period where people were perhaps found guilty or not, and what punishment. So these finalized as of March. I'd like to hear from you, what has happened since? What is the outcome of those that have been finalized? Were there some found guilty? And if so, what punishment or penalties were meted out to them? Because I'm very concerned about the disciplinary action or the lack thereof within the civil service and the entities. And my third question is on page 67 of the annual report, delays in payments. The CDCR held a focus group on delays in payments in September 2010. You know, I'm not sure what the delays in payments refer to, either to by contractors, to their subcontractors and to their workers, I guess so, but I'm not sure, it's not very clear what it says. So there's a huge problem with contractors not paying their subcontractors on time, and some of the smaller subcontractors have to go bankrupt. They can't sit and wait for money. If they're not paid on due date, they have a huge problem. They have a cash flow problem, and they in turn can't pay their workers. So we must also look at the people who don't pay on time and take some action against them. I see in the next page that they should consideration should be given to naming and shaming habitual payment defaulters. I want to know, what have you done further to this? Because this workshop was already in September 2010. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Jackson, an amount of 29,000 was paid for cell phone airtime on a stolen phone that was not timely reported. And we get an explanation of that one. And also an amount of 33,000 was incurred in just penalty charge for early withdrawal of funds. On page 74, on supply chain management, there's a lot of critical stuff. Mm-hmm. When will those vacancies be filled, Jefferson? Number four, Mr. Naidoo, the second page where you said you spoke about a tool, municipal toolkit on infrastructure. Can you expatiate on that? Because you remember, Jefferson, I told you when we were in Mule Mule municipality, where the municipality was faced with the problem of COVID. And I requested that you assist them. And you never came back to me. That's why I want you to expatiate all this infrastructure toolkit. On page 79, what is the reason for the internal audit unit being outsourced to KPMG, Chartered Accountants? And also on page 113, on audit fees, 1.7 million increased by 294,000 from 2011. When you look on page 112, on contractor fees, there's an increase of about 216,000. On board remuneration, an increase of about 818,000. On printing and stationery, there's an increase of about 515,000. Though I would say on venue expenses is a decline by 1,058, of which I would like to congratulate you on that one. And on consulting and provincial fees, there's a decline of about 600. I would like to congratulate you on that one. On security, there's an increase of about 500,775. On electricity, though, I know that the amount is 291,118. I've got a slight problem on that one. Can we be briefed on this increase
data, especially the bot generation. What addresses have you increased your claims? What you did, Baba Chairperson? Thank you very much.
Lastly on financial care, I think we have covered around the issue of the outsourcing of internal audit. I want to know the reason, because there is an external auditor and internal auditor, and the CFO and the CEO must drive that internal audit. I want to know how much is being incurred in this outsourcing. And how long also are you going to outsource this particular function? If we can get an understanding. And lastly, Chair, on the Auditor General's report, I think the CFO did say that they are putting the priority of those particular things that has been identified. But this thing has been on the list for 3 consecutive financial years. I want to know what is it that you're going to do differently to deal with the particular findings of this matter that has been raised by the Auditor General.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and the judge. I'll just tell us a few matters that are operational, and then operational matters I'll refer them to the team. I just want to go through this so that I can get the feeling that everybody will feel satisfied with that you have now recorded there. The main, one of the problems was the target. And we really need specifics on the targets. You need us to make reference to it. Otherwise, this link is 96% and you don't know what it is for, and all the other pages that are relating to targets. The gradings, grade ones, we had reported that we are going to deal with the matter around the grade ones and the grade twos, and the amount of grade twos of 650,000. The contractors, how many of them were developed, and the subsequent people that are dealing with the 2630-189 that are dealing with basically the target. The AG report, the amendment, when are they going to be published? The 11th toolkit, why for provinces and not all the provinces for the average program? The quarterly financial report. Why are we not giving the quarterly financial report? And I think this is just making the total annual one. The lack of oversight on matters that have been outlined by the AG report. Why are we not dealing with the training of the municipalities as well as the public sector, but not the municipalities? The delay in the transformation, the skills development for the artisans, and what are we doing in relation to the young graduates? Page 39, why the higher grading in KZN is understandable in our day because of how businesses in South Africa. Delayed payments by home is delaying that because there's got some actions. What happened to the funders on page 62? And the cell phone expenditure of 39,000 rand, what happened? How could that be missed? And 15,000 or in respect of a penalty. Lots of critical stuff, what are we doing about that? Why are we outsourcing to KPMG? And when are we going to get rid of that? But remuneration, why has it gone up? The general increase on all other expenditure, how are we dealing with it? I'm going to go straight. Let me start first with the board remuneration. I think that it's something that is directly different. When the board started at the CIDB, we did the provincial visit for the board to go to each and every province to deal with the image of the CIDB. There were very critical issues that we thought we need to get information directly from the marketplace, and we went through all those ourselves as the board. We went to all the provinces and we gathered all the information. The reports were issued out on the visits, on such visits. The examples of the issues that came out in those visits were, for instance, the downgrading of contractors, the matters around the grade ones, the matters, it's several issues, identification of work, the relationship between the clients, who are the government departments, and the contractors and consultants. And we felt that it was very important for us to set up those funds to effect the relationship between the CIDB, the clients, and the government departments and the contractors, so that some of the matters can be resolved on a provincial level. The dire need for CIDB to be decentralized, not to have it only at the head office. At the time that we got in, we were talking about the triple C's, which were meant to be a post box for the CIDB. They were just merely people who come in with the forms and put them in there, and they would be sent to the CIDB head office. We then said we want to have the CIDB decentralized. As you know, as this involves a lot of human element in it, in terms of decentralizing the functions of the CIDB. We are still in the process of that at the moment. So those are the matters that we came across in the provinces. But more than anything else, it was to actually get input directly from the market. How the CIDB functioned before, it would have the mandatory national stakeholder forum, where the CIDB would present in that national stakeholder forum. But now, it then said, we want to have two national stakeholder forums there. First one would be, we'd listen to everybody, all those stakeholders, they would give us all their concerns that they would like us to attend to. On the second national stakeholder forum, would then be giving the response of what is it that they did with whatever concerns they have, so as to give the opportunity to the industry to monitor the CIDB itself as well, so that we can give ownership of the CIDB to the industry and not as it was before. So that will be need for us to be going through all those processes. The loss of critical staff. When we came into the CIDB, the CEO of the CIDB resigned. And just, I think, a year after that, then we got the CFO resigning. Then we got the HR head resigning. I think this matter of loss of critical staff was in relation to that. We've still got the CEO, we have got the CFO, I think also the HR person also. Yes. Regarding the grade ones, the matter of grade one is a very grave one. Whereas we found out that about 94% of the people of contractors in the CIDP register were actually grade one. There was actually no plan to develop them or to do anything at the time that we arrived. And I then set a committee where I was going to be part of that committee, to deal with the matter of grade ones, to see the effect of scrapping grade ones if we scrap them. Since it is that we cannot be able to scrap the grade ones, we're going to cause a lot of turmoil, because there are some people that have really done some work at that grade one level. But what needs to happen is that we've got to have a proper curriculum for conductors. For instance, if you look at a structure like NHBRC, you don't just get registered at the NHBRC because you just have got a company, that you've got a construction company. You go through some kind of test that they check you. Now, we have to have that, this CIDB as well, and this is at this initial stage that we are putting to, we want to put together this curriculum for people that want to join construction industry. They must have gone through some certain process. It can't be that people who are unemployed that they're working up the street or just coming to the CIGB with the company registration papers and then call themselves contractors. Now, it cripples the CIGB even in terms of developing such contractors. If we were to call the 94% of those contractors that are registered in the CIGB registered as trade one, we cannot be able to locate all of them. I think we can locate a very small percentage of those. And yet, the bad publicity about the CIGB is coming from those people at that level. The amount of 650,000 for a contractor, yes, we are working on that, on those numbers. I also think those numbers are not realistic. So we soon, I think by towards the end of next month, we will be having a full report on the matter how we are going to handle those grade ones and the amounts that are going to be for grading. The slow delay in the transformation. I have personally gone out and asked for matters around the set aside for development because the contractors cannot be developed in these restaurants that people sit in. We only get now people that get the set aside, being not the people that are meant, that are in the construction industry. Very different people that we don't know. They sit in Nelson Mandela Square. They are sitting in all the nice restaurants there with computers. But those are the highly connected people that get those set aside that are meant to develop people. Up until there is a fight on such corrupt activities, there is still going to be a problem. The set aside can be a very good tool for development under the monitor of an organization of the nature of CIDB. And we have some discussions already now at another level on Black Business Council regarding the set aside with the past stages, and we are hoping that we are going to get it right. And there is a document on transformation that will be made available to the members of the committee within the next 4 weeks. Already, that document is being produced by the CIDB, but in order for the committee to be able to compare the alignment between the expectation from the part of the market, like the Black Business Council and the CIDB, I will personally make it available as well, the one from the point of view of Black Business Council. The skills development for artisans. There's a very strong need for this matter. Once again, there is a need to set aside some projects to develop people that are going to be actively involved in artisanry and also in construction. So I'm hoping that soon enough we'll be able to get to that point where in order to fast track development of the previously disadvantaged people, we should have the set aside. But let me hasten to say, those set aside should not be meant for the highly connected people that are not even in those industries that are meant to develop, but those should be for the people that have been practitioners in those industries. That would help us a great deal. It would keep us very, very quickly from the problem we are. For instance, I had Honorable Keller on the matter of the 2010, preparation of the 2010 infrastructure. Even a project like that one for the preparation for the 2010, had it been used properly, it could have developed a lot of contractors. It can't be that when now we are sitting now, we don't have black-owned grade 9, or at least a company of the size of Marel Roots or WBH or basically black-owned company like that. And that is what the market asks us about. Young graduates.
This can be done, I think, together with CDE. I think we have to collaborate with CDE. I might just want to say quickly that there has been a general sense of reluctance from the council, professional councils, to develop young black graduates. They seem not to be embracing transformation to the extent that can develop black people. To a point that a guy gets employed and then gets into a program, he's a young graduate, they send him up and down for prints and all of that, and that is a problem. And maybe it will also need the portfolio committee to assist on aligning the councils with the transformation initiatives.
No. I think when I say that what needs to be done, it's been done because it's been done in other countries, is that these consultants are working for the government. Now, the requirement in giving somebody work is that you take so many young graduates. The same applies with the contractor. If I get a contract of 10 million, you got to take so many youth to skill them in carpentry and all that. That must be a requirement in your contract. Thank you.
Thank you, Agina.
Very much well agreed and understood, and I compare with you. That should be the case. However, also there's got to be general willing, which I am now also going on one by one on the bigger contractors to see them. There's a general lack of goodwill to develop the emerging sector, and that's the problem. But selling on contracts is such a good thing. We definitely, I'm sure my colleagues here will take this on record. I fully agree. However, I need to explain this. There seems to be quite a lot that we need to deal with in the industry. Number one, the types of contracts that are being used. We have got all these stage contracts that are in there. I can't see why you can't have one contract for building and one contract for civil, and that's it. We have got all these strange contracts that are a problem, that are not properly aligned with transformation. Number two, the monitoring capability for the CIDP, we need support from yourselves regarding capacitating CIDP to be able.
You see, on the road, yesterday we fought with the CBE because they want the politicians to assist them. And we said, no ways. You must make it a point and entity that you fight for the inclusion of youth. That you should not be, you fight your own fight. You are too comfortable where you are. In whatever you are doing as entities, there's no sense of agency. I need it. Can I explain that if there is an issue? You look at Honorable Dreyer, if there's an issue that she wants to raise. She doesn't settle it, okay. You'll see her, I know her. If there's a thing, she will, you know, she gets deeply educated. You should do the same if there's an issue. If there's a burning issue, you must not just relax. Listen, I do. You must make it a way that you don't sleep well. So there's no way that you can say politicians must come in and help you. You must fight this fight. You know what the problems are, like I did when we were in Lemule. I told you to say, you'll come down and come and solve this matter. I don't know, you didn't report back to us as a portfolio committee to say you have solved it. You know what is happening down there? The poor women, especially women in the ministry, they know nothing about engineering. What these men are doing, they go around reopening old boreholes. And they cheat by saying these are new boreholes. Meanwhile, they are not new boreholes, they are boreholes in the field. And that's how, you know, the way we detected it is because one guy went behind a bush, and the two of them, Swato was also in the bush. And Swato over my head, this guy saying, hey, this tradition, man, they now know that this is an old borehole, and we're in trouble. You get it? And you are there as the IDP, you are not assisting us in making sure that the municipality tool kit on infrastructure, they are hands-on, Mr. Nadu. I don't know some of these things, but please assist us. Baba.
Thank you, ma'am. I think for now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, for regarding the targets and all the other matters, I'll start with Mr. Naidu, and then after that, it will be followed by the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and other members. I'm going to try and go through each of the issues. And Chairperson, if I'm spending too much time on an issue, you'll just call me forward and ask me to move on. Thanks, Chair. The first honourable member asked the questions regarding the performance targets and raised the issue of ambiguity. I think our dear person has spoken to that. I think that we need to acknowledge, yes, to summarise into a table of this nature in this little block, there's limited space, and that shouldn't be an excuse, but there's a whole host of substantiating information and documents which we can make available to unpack each of these issues. But the auditor has also raised it with us in terms of the National Treasury framework and smart reporting that we need to tighten up in terms of the manner in which we report and to ensure the smart principles are carried through in our reporting. So in the process going forward, the Auditor General is assisting us in ensuring that, and we are also tightening up in terms of our reporting requirements. But on each of the information, if there isn't enough information, please request it from us so we can avail it. There's some detailed tables as I go through some of what I'm speaking to. The page 18 first, the question on the 9 provinces. The 9 provinces and 1 national roadshow, when it says achieved, client facilitation workshops/roadshows were held in all provinces. So that was actually achieved, and all provinces did receive roadshows as well as a national roadshow. Second question was regarding the 1 empty block, and that is somehow a gremlin of some sort, because you can take it in authority from me, this is my program, and that target was achieved. That's one on the guidelines. The target was that there need to be a presentation and awareness promotion of guidelines to the National Contract Development Forum as well as provincial contract development forums, and that did happen in the financial year. So that block should never have been blank, should have been as achieved, and all was in terms of the target requirements. Page 45, the advice brochures, the next target that was discussed there was the advice brochures, and if I refer you to page 45 of the report, there are 4 brochures, just snapshots of those, and they were in the presentation as well. The copies of that are available, we can make that available to the portfolio committee of the package, provide that chairperson to yourself, the hard copies. But in the interim, while we're getting that ready to you, if I could refer you to our website, we have uploaded to the website, it's available, or members in the provinces have access to our provincial offices. They are on our shelves as well as hard copies, but as I said, we'll make a pack available for members and provide that, each of those brochures, to yourselves. The chairperson spoken about, yes, rightfully, we shouldn't just put down a target of 95% needs to be reached and then say we've exceeded that and put down 96.6. We need to quantify that in terms of the actual numbers. Just in terms of those, on page 39, the tables that other members were speaking to in terms of the actual stats, I think Caitlin was quoted, those are the actual numbers, and those reflect then the 96.3% of registrations. So we could work backwards from that, but I can package for you stats to say what number 96.6 actually then as total reflect. How many staff were trained in terms of page 20? That was a specific program, and in the annual report of the organization, in terms of that specific target, all staff were trained, meaning that in the program there were 47 staff. What were they trained on? They were trained in 2 areas. One was a generic training in terms of performance management and drafting of business plans. The other training area was identified in terms of a needs analysis with regard to each individual staff member. So if they were at the coal face of contractor interactions, it may have been dispute resolution, conflict management, customer care, we identified on a needs basis. Each staff member was trained in 2 areas as well identified. And again, I've got a detailed table of what those training involved, what the costs were, and we can unpack that for members if they need that additional information. the four provinces on page 22. Why just four provinces? I think in terms of aid process, we have to look at firstly where would we make the greatest impact with limited resources. In some instances, it's not possible to roll out to all provinces at one go. We have to test and pilot whether this is a useful initiative to actually undertake in terms of sharing of this information through these type of what we call breakfast sessions, as opposed to other media or communication methods, hard copies of distribution, print media, electronically on our web, etc. So we tested or piloted, and we realized in last financial year that it was useful, it was well received, and this financial year it is actually being cascaded to all provinces. The four provinces that it actually occurred in were Gauteng province, KZN province, Eastern Cape and Western Cape. The identification of those four provinces or why we chose them was mostly based on the activity from both the rand value on projects as well as the number of registrations in those provinces where we felt that they will perhaps make the greatest impact, and that was the rationale as to why those specific provinces. On page 39, questions were raised with regard to both the Northwest and the Northern Cape in terms of the table of grading stats registrations. Why are there no grade 9, 0 in the Northwest, and the Northern Cape no grade 8 or 9? That's something that we'd have to leave to markets to say how many contracts are active in that province, and then intervene as CIDB and as government to say what can we do, and do we actually want grade 8 and 9 in all provinces, and do we want big numbers in all provinces? And to a large extent, the market dictates that as well, to say, are there adequate projects that are being put out to industry or being put out in that province from the client department to sustain a grade 9 in that province? And the rand value spend in both the Northwest and the Northern Cape does not correlate with having a large number of grade 8 and 9s. And that's why we've said there, that number of construction companies, their head office perhaps is Gauteng and then operate in the various provinces. So it's always a debate as to whether every province should act as a little state in themselves and build up a huge capacity, and what happens when the infrastructure is rolled out, and then how does the grade 9 sustain itself within that province is the question. But it doesn't take away from anything today that we need to build capacity, and perhaps at the middle band, so somewhere between grade 4 and 7 is perhaps where we should actually look at building the capacity. The grade 8 and 9 is a question whether we want to have large volumes in each province, but again, that's an issue for debate. There was a question by the Honourable Member in terms of MinMet. In 2012-13, we talk about a balancing delivery paper, and we simultaneously talk about the NCDP. I think there's a difference between the two. The NCDP was taken to MinMet for endorsement, and that actually happened recently when I spoke my presentation in September. The NCDP framework itself was published and ready for MinMet in the last financial year. The balancing paper was something that was identified that needed to be taken to MinMet and was drafted in the early stages of 2012-13 at this year, and has subsequently been taken to MinMet. So both the NCDP and the delivery paper in this financial year have been taken to MinMet and endorsed by MinMet. Based on the mechanism of how we actually take movement through the grades, I think that's an important one, and it speaks directly to contractor development and growth of contractors, and that's where the National Contractor Development Program and the CID strategy on contractor development comes into play, and there are a whole host of success factors and enabling environments and mechanisms to create this growth. We've recognized that the rate of it is not adequate, and there are various practice notes and now monitoring and pushing of clients through MinMet endorsements and approvals as well as recent to ensure that this growth and movement is seen at a more rapid rate. Under provincial contractor training, questions were asked about the number of contractors that were trained. Again, we said we achieved training in each province. There's a full table and details of who the recipients of those training were. In most instances, they are contractors who are in development programs. Those development programs have to not have the budget from the client department to train. So identified areas of training were recognized, four specific areas, business management, financial management, occupational health and safety as examples. And in each province, two training sessions were held with a minimum of 20 contractors each. So 20 contractors per provinces, per province across nine provinces, a minimum of 360 contractors in total. And I say a minimum because in some instances there were increased numbers. And as I say, those recipients were contractors in development program or through an association partnership agreement with various associations, the like of SAWIC or anyone affiliated to the BCB, to partner agreements, those contracts were recipient in those provinces of that specific identified training, and there is details in terms of that person. The question on the toolkit, it was raised by yourself, Chair, and an honorable member, in terms of the progress, and I think you've raised it with the Chair as well. The infrastructure delivery management toolkit is a partnership with National Treasury, rolled out initially through national departments, then cascading to provincial departments, and then the municipalities in terms of a phased roll-up plan. First, high-capacity municipalities, and then the low-capacity municipalities. Obviously, there's issues in terms of resource capacity and capability from the JDB side. At the moment, we've got one individual who's assisting in that capacitation. It's big task requiring to up-ramp the resources and the training requirements. Even when these sessions are set up, especially with the municipalities, the attendance by the municipal officials, there's no regulatory requirement as to them attending such capacitation or training, and they're embracing and endorsing and taking it forward has been a challenge that we've faced. But through the National Treasury, we've now come out with a roll-up plan, and it's being entrenched and will probably be audited as well. So we hope that in this financial year, we'll be seeing it cascaded to all of the required levels. Chair, my last 5 minutes, if I could, cover the rest of the issues. The software issue, on page 30, an honorable member raised the issue of the 1st August, and has it started? The quick response to that is both in the EDMS system, the electronic document management system of scanning of applications and getting that into a paperless environment, as well as the new construction register management system that we're using to register contractors. There's rollout of that as of 1st August was being commenced within the stabilization process where you migrate information, etc. So all of it is underway and in hand, and will be stabilized by the end of October in terms of that process. On page 89, I think it is the CFO might want to have a quick response on the SMART principles, but I'll just say I've responded already to say we are aligning to National Treasury framework in terms of SMART. Smartening our targets and deliverables. Delay in financing, in finalizing the regulations, and when is it coming? All of the process issues, I think two honorable members raised questions on that. Yes, you're correct in honorable member Gaylor saying that the regulations have been signed by the minister. The process that it now requires is it needs to be advertised, gazetted, which has been done. There's a 60-day period open for comments from industry associations, contractors, and anyone else. Thereafter, we compile and consolidate all of that input into a report to the minister for final adoption and approval. We envisage that by the latter part of November is when the 60 days lapses. The report and finalization endorsement by minister should be forthcoming in about December, January. So that process is well underway. We've got all the signatures and efforts are running currently. Coincidentally, tomorrow is the capacitation session where we are explaining all of this regulations to contractors. Those that are part of stakeholder groupings, so they take it to their constituents to stimulate any further discussion or comments. And so that's the roadshow or capacitation or communication process that we're underway with CRDP. I think other questions on the training at provincial levels I've covered. CFO will perhaps cover the AG report issue on fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but just to say that there is a corrective action plan in place. The questions were asked, when are we going to turn around and move away? The corrective action plan deals with most of the issues and processes of fruitless expenditure in terms of the cell phone as an example, corrective action in terms of the staff member and policies and procedures in that regard take remedial action have been undertaken. Public sector training, honorable member Gaylor also raised the issue of the discipline system. In the presentation we briefly covered an audit blitz which was conducted. After an audit blitz we then identified a whole number of transgressions by client departments. It speaks of compliance strategies that CIDB has in place in terms of our regulations. And in terms of aligning to audits of municipalities or entities, that then becomes an auditable issue which will be picked up in the financials of others. So when we report that also to the Auditor General as well as National Treasury, and so there's a cross-check in terms of that compliance as part of the disciplining process of public sector. Some of the disciplines all cover, I think Honourable Member Dreyer raised the issue of discipline that there were hearings conducted, those were specifically to contractors that had contravened CIDB regulations, so any irregular activity. Their corrective actions have been taken, such as removal of that contractor from the CIDB database for a period of time in terms of a sanction that is issued from those hearings, reinstatement thereafter, etc. Their name and shame or publishing of that both on the Gazette and on our website after the hearing is finalized. Name and shame, yes, Chairperson. In terms of, as I said, the actual contractor's name is published on our website. Clients then, should they wish to actually award a contract to that specific contractor, are removed from our database. So in terms of the regulations, you cannot award a contract to a contractor who's been disciplined and is in a sanctioned period. So if we said for a six-month period you're not allowed to get a contract, that means the client won't be able to pick and activate an award for contract. If they do, it will be in contravention of regs and then we'll pick it up as a compliance issue. Name and shame in terms of putting that contractor's name on our website is open for all public to see and on the Gazette as well. Delayed payments on page 67, the process is underway to say yes. In fact, at the next board meeting, the proposal or paper being presented in terms of recommendation for both an access note and some regulation in terms of the delayed payment requirements. That meeting was held September 2011 and processes have been underway since then in terms of further engagement with stakeholders and drafting of the required legislative recommendations.
Is a delayed payment by client departments to contractor? Can I just ask you
one? Sorry, Chair, I'll cover that. I think there was a question that was specifically asked by your Honourable Member there as well. Yes, just to clarify, delay payments here is quantified as firstly where a client department infringes on a payment requirement in terms of the contractor's agreement with a contractor. So it's actually public sector not paying a contractor and a contractor for whatever reason then not perhaps then paying a subcontractor. So it goes through the entire chain. And there was a workshop that was held where all of these issues were fleshed out. Fingers were being pointed in different directions and the CIDB facilitated such a session where clients were complaining about their relationship with the professionals who oversee the contractors. Contractors were complaining about the conduct of professionals who oversee and manage them. So all of those issues have been put together in a detailed paper that has some recommendations in terms of ensuring that delay payments are addressed.
What about
my friend
Andrea and Honorable Gayla?
Yes, on that late payment or non-payment, even in some cases, often the contractor, the Department of Public Works, has paid the contractor. The contractor employs subcontractors, but the contractor doesn't pay his subcontractors. And I've had kind of desperate pleas from people who performed work as a subcontractor for the contractor, and they weren't paid. And when I took it up and asked questions with the manager, the answer was, the department can do nothing about it because the department has paid its contractor. And that's where responsibility stops. But is there something one can do about these subcontractors that don't get paid by the main contractor? So will you also name and shame these contractors who don't pay the subcontractors? People's really families are destroyed and people's lives are put at risk because of this thing. So the subcontractor, the contractor makes a lot of money out of it and he doesn't pay the subcontractors and they take the brunt of it. And that's the smaller contractors are the more vulnerable people.
Okay,
yeah, no, I concur with Honourable Tarea, but it's not only the subcontractors, even the workers suffer themselves. But this issue at Chairperson, you won't be able to resolve it because of the problem of how these contracts are being issued. The only way to resolve this is when this department takes over, clearly claims its mandate. Why am I saying at Chairperson? The department does work for client departments. Now, the contract document, which ties the contractor and the department, is done through public works, guaranteed through public works. Then who pays? Health pays that time, especially the provinces. Now, that money is not ring-fenced. The health uses that money for something else and does not pay them. Some of them are 3 years, they are not paid. 3 years. Some have died because of non-payment. Unless this is solved with by this department, reclaims its mandate, and reinvests the money and pays the contractor because legally this department tried to contract with the contractor. They are supposed to pay. That's where the problem is. Thank you.
Thank you, Abdullah.
Chairperson, I think the comments are useful. I've mentioned there is a process that's underway where stakeholders' comments and inputs are being received, and I think these are useful comments that we'll input into that process as well. On page 68 of the report, we've spoken about, so the first bullet at the top of the page on our annual report says consideration should be given to naming and shaping habitual payment defaults, possible introduction of construction legislation will be considered. So I think all of those are recommendations that's going to be going forward in terms of this process, and I think the comments of the member in terms of the role of DPW is also acknowledged, and I think the advisor and others will be privy to that as well. Chairperson, I think I'll hand over to the CFO. We should take another 5 minutes. I know I overshot my time about 10 minutes. But CFO...
I agree with South African CEO is looking at you to say you're consuming.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll make a plan. I agree with South African CEO. We please allow them to step up. Yes, CFO.
CFO, I think just the KPD outsourced issue and the internal audit issue are all for you to cover. Over to
you. Thanks, Chairperson. I think I'll just cover, certainly the issue around page 89, the issue around the accounting authority not taking effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure, as well as the accounting authority not exercising effective oversight in ensuring the issue of planning and monitoring. I think what I just want to mention there is that as Chairperson of the Board explained, there were obviously shortcomings insofar as leadership is concerned in the CRDB, and those have since been addressed. And further to that, the SCA, my personal opinion is that what probably happened in the CRDB is that as the CRDB grew, there wasn't much attention in augmenting the staffing issues in the support function, particularly SCM. And I'm happy to say that an SCM manager has since been appointed. She or he only starts work on the 1st of November, whereas previously we did not have an SCM manager. Issues around what I'm currently doing is looking at policies governing SCM and other related functions that obviously inform how SCM work, and looking at the legislation itself and the whole SCM framework, how we can then align it to our internal policy and how we then review our policy, our processes in SCM going forward. We're also reviewing the delegations of authority so that those are then in line with what we are reviewing in the SCM policy. And also the training of officials becomes very important, particularly training of officials in the different bid committees, so that they understand the different roles played by those committees. And the other thing is around issues of us not providing quarterly or even half-yearly financials. There's basically continuous training that we are attending to. And as a CFO, I have since developed an irregular expenditure register. Obviously, for the first 6 months before I started with the CID, before this current financial year, which I'm currently analyzing, so that I then attend to the issues of dealing with the root causes of how these things come about, obviously with the issue of the development of the policy and the delegations as well. And furthermore, last week I issued a circular to CIDB staff, obviously just communicating the stance of executive management insofar as issues around some of the causes of irregular expenditures are concerned, where I've basically communicated that going forward we're going to be having a zero tolerance approach in matters of such expenditure. And also there is a commitment schedule that has been developed, which I'm currently analyzing, so that we see some of the things in terms of what we've committed to. We've also planned to do mock financials during the interim audit. I've already had a meeting with the Auditor General where we've discussed some of the issues that were raised in their management letter and how we then agree to move forward. We've discussed the fact that we need to conduct an interim audit, and during that interim audit, my plan is that we will then also issue mock financials so that we also am able to assess where we are in terms of addressing some of the issues that were shortcomings in the past. And insofar as page 62 is concerned, and I think that was around issues on disciplinary hearings on outcomes. I will allow the previous acting CFO maybe to talk further to that, because these are issues prior and this financial year. But what I'd like to mention is that this coming Monday, I've obviously called a management meeting with the different units within corporate services, and this matter becomes one of the issues that are in the agenda that we will be discussing, where I've asked the new HR manager to also come with a report so that we then look at issues where there's pending disciplinary cases that have not been finalized, so that I'm able to then look at those and try and prioritize in terms of where they are and what the causes of some of those things have been. And then dealing with the issue of fruitless expenditure around the 29,000 on a lost cell phone, I think Mr. Zulu will also be able to elaborate further on that. But what I'd like to mention is that obviously with my analyzing of the environment and looking at some of the policies that guide how we do some of the operations, I'm also attending as a matter of priority to the issue of a policy on cellular phones. And I am looking at perhaps reviewing how we attend to that matter. For instance, the CIDB takes contracts for officials that qualify for cell phones. So what I'm looking at is to review that particular benefit to say perhaps individuals should then take those contracts and repay them an allowance. So it doesn't necessarily take away the benefits, but rather it takes away the risk from CIDB in terms of dealing with those. So I'm looking at that, and I'm also looking at the loss control policy that will then determine what steps do we take should anybody lose an asset within CIDB, which will obviously, once developed, will be workshopped to staff and our consult, and then obviously everyone then becomes aware of how we then move forward. With regard to the issue of 33,000 on the interest penalty charge, it is my understanding that at the CIDB we have various accounts, for instance, an investment account, a 32-day account, where we put the bulk of our funding and we transfer as and when there is a need for us to be able to honor our payments. And it is my understanding that in certain instances during the year 2011-12, we had cases where we needed to urgently withdraw from that particular account where we then paid interest penalty charges. But those interest penalty charges actually get absorbed from the interest income that we get from the investment account. For instance, we had an 11% increase insofar as the interest income is concerned in the previous year. I've touched on the issue around FSCM vacancies, which I'm looking at to try and align with our policies and our processes and then augment where I feel that we have shortcomings so that we address this kind of findings in future. And then with regards to the internal audit unit issue, particularly the KPMG, it has been one of my observations as well. Basically, I'm made to understand that it is a three-year contract that we have with KPMG. I've already consulted with the National Treasury Internal Audit Unit to find out if they can't assist us going forward with internal audit issues to obviously assist with our own internal audit that we have in the department, because we don't have much capacity internally. So what's been happening is that the internal audit function has been outsourced to KPMG, and for 2011-12, the spend in that particular deliverable was $788, which was a slight increase when you compare it with 2010. So it is a three-year contract, which I believe expires sometime next year. I've already, because the process is to then go out and tender for another contract on internal audit was already underway. I have asked that we halt that process so that I then finalize my discussions with Treasury, find out what sort of assistance we can get from them and how perhaps we could even look at upscaling our own internal audit unit within the CIDB so that we then rely less on KPMG or other internal auditors that could be used going forward. I think, and then lastly, on page 112 of the annual report, there were various matters that were obviously raised with regards to our expenses on operating matters. Firstly, the issue around the board remuneration. I will attempt to answer as much as I can, and my colleague will then assist wherever there's additional information. The board group,
my apology, can I say, let the remaining questions be on paper. And CFO, the disciplinary action, have you taken any disciplinary action on the guy who lost his or her cell phone and 229,000, the part of money? Why did he or she keep quiet? What steps have you taken corrective for this very person not to keep quiet and report that he or she has lost his cell phone and you keep on paying? Paying what? That's what I'm interested in. Could you have run? Let it be on paper. There are many questions, let it be on paper. Do we agree or remember? Baba Gandhi, do you have anything to say the last week?
Except that I could actually just say one little thing about the cell phone quickly. The cell phone, I got to know about it as well when I just got into the CSIRO report of the CIDP. And I understand that the person lost the cell phone on a Friday, and on a Monday, that amount was 29,000. I think there's some way that people do to take, I don't know, to take a turn from...
Transfer.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Transfer to another cell phone.
Yes.
And that's what I want to know. What steps?
Yes. No, that will be writing definitely.
But I can if I'm a fraudster, I can also transfer my payment at time to another home. That's possible. That we need to stop it. And then the last word, closing word.
Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. Thank you.
I thought you would say thank you very much. We'll make sure that we move CIDP to the greater heights. That issues, problems that are there will be unlocked. And you'll make sure that you assist the Department of Public Works in making sure that that's delivered. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care and drive safely. Akrima South Africa, over to you. Yes, I think it's key. The first key outside. Can we have 5 minutes break? Please, while they are getting ready.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. My name is Baby Silinga. I've got the management team led by Mr. Joe Odiambo. He'll introduce that of the management team. Chair, Agama, I think in relative terms, it's a relatively very small entity. So hopefully, that will translate to the time that will be taken. Just to indicate that even though Agrima is somewhat an entity, but it in fact is run as a program by the CERA. So the context of its governance is within the CERA parameters. And of course, I haven't got the rating for last year, but year before last, the CERA was deemed by the AG as having been the best managed entity, having got a virtually clean audit. So you would have your disclaimer, you'd have your qualified, and you'd have your unqualified, and you'd have a matter of emphasis with an unqualified, and then you'd have a clean audit, and they got the top rating. But I don't have the one for last year. But I know that we got a relatively clean audit. I don't know about the rating. So the context of our governance is within the CSR one. There are no issues at all because we operate within the processes and procedures as dictated by creation and a separate or an independent entity, but that is being handled by the department. In so far as operational issues, I think my colleagues would actually drop it. I am advised that one of our financial managers is in operation and is not able to be here, that somebody else was deputizing for that particular manager. I take the opportunity then, Chair, to hand over to the Chief Executive, Mr. Joe Odiapo. Thanks.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, representatives from the Ministry, Department of Public Works, ladies and gentlemen, all protocol observed, it's my great pleasure to present ARMA South Africa's 2011-2012 annual report, and I'm accompanied by Mr. Sami Skosana, who's Technical Services Group Leader of ARMA South Africa, seated 2 feet away from me on the right, and Kombo Mieza, who is representing the finance manager, as alluded to by the chairperson. So in my presentation to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Public Works, I will cover the following aspects, which is a performance report. I will then touch on the progress against plan targets, governance matters, I'll touch briefly on human resources, a finance report. I start by looking at our performance report and state that ARGMA South Africa, as alluded to by our chairperson, is an entity, is one of the small entities of the Department of Public Works. Maybe small in size, but I believe the importance of the strategic role that it plays is key. And we're there to support government policy. We are there with a strategic role to undertake technical assessments of innovative construction systems in support of government policy. And I believe that a lot of the products that we do, certificate, address the government's triple challenge policy of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. I also believe that a lot of our products that we do certificate can be used to assist in developing the areas of our country which need development the most, which are the rural areas. Why do I say this? These areas are in our need of intervention, and some of the products that we do certificate are suitable for use in those areas. I'll illustrate this later in my presentation where I'll give typical examples of some of these products. Product certificates, some of them are light and can be effectively used in remote, deep rural areas to address above challenges. The products that we do certificate have technical and socioeconomic advantages over and above conventional products, and I will also illustrate it later in our presentation. ARGMA South Africa is well positioned to play a supporting role to the National Department of Public Works in implementing the proposed government infrastructure delivery project program and improved service delivery. Why do I say this? It's because ARGMA certificated products can be used to fast track service delivery. This is because some of these products can be delivered much quicker than conventional materials. In terms of technical performance, some of these materials have superior technical performance compared to conventional materials. For example, improved energy efficiency in buildings contributes towards reducing the emissions of global greenhouse gases. Some of the products are labor intensive and therefore still create jobs. Some of them are cost effective, some of them are lighter, can be easily transported. And when the light materials are transported to the areas where they're needed, they provide employment to the people within that environment, within the locality. Some products don't require a lot of skill to erect, therefore any local unskilled labor can be employed to erect some of the products. So they have several advantages. Now, we believe with all these advantages and the growing awareness of innovation in the construction industry, there's a need for people who are in positions of authority, like local authorities, to recognize and to embrace this ASMA certificated non-standard construction product and building systems. Therefore, I believe there's a very important role that AGRIMA does in supporting the national department, and that is what I want to state as an opening. In terms of progress against planned targets, I just want to say something about the targets. AGRIMA is in its 43rd year of existence, and the targets that we have used are the average outputs that have been obtained over the 43-year history. Most of the targets have been superseded in terms of performance. The target for applications, these are applications for technical assessment. An application is not just a simple application form, it's a whole batch of technical information, which includes drawings, technical description, manufacturing process, quality management process, etc., etc., which describes the system in technical terms. Therefore, it's a very detailed document and requires a lot of effort to go through it and to be able to accept it as a formal application. Some of the applications to be accepted, it has to meet a certain criteria. If it does not meet that, we don't consider it as a fully documented application process. And similarly, an evaluation offer is also a technical document, which is similarly detailed. It will include the details of what the product is, what the test protocol is, what testing will be done to it, how that testing will be done, what samples are required, where the testing will be done, and a whole host of other details. So equally, it's a detailed technical document which requires a lot of input to develop. Therefore, we see the figures that it may seem modest, but I must add that they're in line with international outputs of other similar technical assessment organizations worldwide. So these targets are reliant, and I'm pleased to report that AGRIMA has surpassed its performance targets and has achieved better outputs than was planned. So I'm happy to report that the technical output, in summary, was much better than planned. In terms of other activities that you're involved in terms of outputs, I must say that the interaction with other public works entities, I'll just give a few examples of some of these interactions. The IDT, we built lots of schools, not us, but the IDT has built the schools in the Eastern Cape using alternative construction technologies. The CIDB, we've just been presenting prior to us, we are involved in the transformation task team that's developing the transformation, that's coming up with the transformation summit on the 24th and 25th of November next month. With the construction CBE, we're involved in the transformation of the professional bodies. We're working together with them to try and assist them with the task team there. We're also working with them with the implementation of a skill development strategy. So you see that we're working with all these entities on different levels. In terms of community services, we've been working with I'll give this example later, the rural women in Gombani, in the Venda district, Eastern Cape, the women there, etc., etc. So AGRIMA is involved in a lot of these activities. In terms of governance matters, our annual report is tabled in Parliament, as stipulated on the 28th of September. As stated by our chairperson, AGRIMA is funded and reports to the National Department of Public Works. And I believe we're currently performing very well and in accordance with our mandate, but we believe that we can achieve much more. Could we have our own feet, in other words, in terms of a legal mandate? But that is an issue that is being handled by the department, and I'll allow them to report accordingly. In terms of financial, we also believe that should our finances be better, then we can achieve much more. But currently, in terms of what we have, I believe our performance is good. In terms of board governance, we do have 8 board members who are appointed for a period of 3 years. The chairperson is Mr. Peter Selinga. We do hold an annual strategic planning session with the board, which is held, I think, in August. And we hold at least 4 meetings of the board every year, minimum. And we believe that the board is following up on the steps of the previous plan. from the previous board and moving the agency forward. The board's technical staff committee is well focused and ensures that AGMA is well governed and the financial statements are audited as part and parcel of the CSR, and as mentioned by the chairperson, it has received a clean audit report and has been held in the past as a good example of good financial management within the public sector. I've just listed the board member there. I'll just mention who they are. The photos are on the next slide. Ms. Ntembo Mobo, who is a lecturer at the University of Johannesburg. Kirsty has mentioned that he's here. Jeffrey Mahachi, Dr. Mahachi, is the acting CEO at the NPRC. Mr. Francis Akamu is the manager of the Bureau of Standards. Hans Hickman is a logistical professional, previous director of the CSR. Mariana Manrek is the national regulator for compulsory certification. Then you have a representative from WHO, who is a legal manager at Adelaide Bernape, and Mr. Fredericks is a consultant in OHS. Now, you see, this board is made up of highly technical people from a wide range of stakeholders who we interact with. We complement the work done by the Bureau of Standards as well as the National Regulator of Compulsory Certification, because we've incorporated them into our board, as well as the CEO of the NABRC. So we are part and parcel of industry, and the board does an excellent job in doing strategic overview of the activities of AGMA South Africa. As mentioned previously, AGMA is part and parcel of the CSR for our policies, operations, procedures, and reporting within the CSR. It is in line with the CSR policies and structures. But the board does the oversight. In terms of organizational structure, the next page, the board does oversight and operates at strategic level. The technical agency, which I head, is part of also of the CSR, as previously mentioned. We do have a technical committee that's made up of board members and the agency, which does approval of the certificate, and rely on industry experts, because we don't have all the expertise in us. It cannot happen because of the wide range of products which we look at. So we rely on built environment professionals to assist us to undertake the expert work and give us an expert opinion on the performance of this innovative system. Ladies and gentlemen, you must appreciate that innovative products, some of them, we've never heard of them, we've never seen them. Therefore, you need an equally intelligent industry expert, a built environment professional, to assist us to give that expert opinion on the performance of the product which is submitted to us for our independent assessment of technical performance. In terms of the technical development cycle, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, the CSRR's role is to work on concept and technology development, product development. And when it comes to introduction of the product into the market, we, AGMA, play that strategic role in the middle where we provide an independent assessment of system performance. I'll repeat that again. The CSRR works in the area of technology development, development performance criteria and test method, which is an upfront work in the research and development environment. It's a separate independent activity. When it comes to the product coming to the market, we do the independent assessment. We do the technical assessment. Therefore, we need that autonomy as AGMA to be able to do that independent technical opinion, whether that system is fit for purpose or not. Now, the role of the Bureau of Standards is once we have developed enough of these similar systems, then they come up and develop national standards. Totally separate activity, and then products can then be used and assessed in accordance with national standards. So there are three different distinct activities. First is you develop the research and development, you come up with this new idea. Us, our role is to do the independent technical assessment. And the Bureau of Standards' role is to develop national standards, codes of practice, and come up with SABS mark on standardized products. Three distinct separate activities. Very distinct, very clear, and as I mentioned previously, the Bureau of Standards does sit on a board, Mr. Frank McCallum. So in terms of our international links and operation, we are a member of the World Federation of Technical Assessment Organizations. AGMA South Africa is the only member from Africa. This organization, its mandate is to undertake assessments of innovative products for which there are no national standards. As you can see, the member states there, there's a big concentration of members from the European countries up there in the middle. The BBA is in the UK, the CFTB is in France, LNC is in Spain, there's Portugal, there's a whole host of European countries. There's Japan, there's Australia, there's Brazil, there's Canada and the USA. And in Africa, we are the only association. This is an important body which allows for products which are tested by one member country to be accepted in other member countries. Therefore, through this assessment, South African manufactured products can be exported and used in the United States. Innovative products which have ARMA certification can be accepted there because of this collaboration within this World Federation. And similarly, products from those countries may be used here and vice versa. On the next slide, I just have the flag of the countries, and I must say that in 2008, we hosted the annual meeting of this auspicious organization. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, next I'll just talk briefly about the human resources. As our chairperson mentioned, we have a modest financial allocation, but we believe strongly that transformation within the built environment profession, as was mentioned by the honorable members earlier, is a key issue. Within the agency, we've done our bit, and we hope that other agencies can do the same. ARGMA continues with a strong emphasis on the development of human resources to enhance skill levels and efficiency of technical staff. We do this by providing them with training opportunities. We do this by encouraging them to undertake challenging and more meaningful work. And I'm happy to say that within the agency, we've achieved 92% of either black or female staff members. We also, as I mentioned previously, make use of a technical committee. Now, this is a committee made of the board members, industry experts, and the technical agency. This committee is the one that does the approval of certificates. We do the independent technical assessment work. The approval of certificates is done at another level, which is a technical committee, which is a higher level. It's made up of board members, industry experts, and the agency. And this technical committee has enhanced its performance and efficiency at operational level, both in terms of number and scale of experts. And I must state that transmission within the agency has largely been addressed. Currently, we have about 25% black females, black males about 50%, white males 8%, and white females 17%. And the numbers are listed there, modest number, I must add. In terms of qualifications, we have a whole host and a whole range of qualifications. We have a couple of doctors, both male and female. Masters, we have quite a few, and a couple with bachelor's degrees, diplomas, and non-tertiary other support staff. So we do make use of a shared services system, so the lower level staff members, not the lower level, the support structures are not counted as staff members within the agency, but are part of the shared services model. The shared services model means that services such as legal, finance, human resources are centralized within the entire organization, and they use a shared services model. It's been proven to be more efficient, I believe so, and cost effective. Now, I'll touch briefly on the financial. As I mentioned earlier, the CSR has received an unqualified audit report from the Office of Auditor General for the last few years and has been held as an example of good financial management within the public sector. ARGMA South Africa, as an agency, operates under ministerial delegation authority from the Minister of Public Works. The grant funding for the agency is channeled from the department to the CSR, and this funds are ring-fenced within the CSR built environment unit, a separate competent area. Therefore, these funds are not touched by the CSR. It's ring-fenced for ARGMA and ARGMA only. And agency's transactions are subject to the policies, as mentioned previously by the chairperson, procedures and governance processes of the CSR. And we are audited as part and parcel of the CSR built environment unit, and we are happy with the clean financial audit reports and the unqualified audit reports that we have received from the Auditor General. In terms of figures, on honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, our grant income increased last year by about 6.7%, from 7.753351 to 8272807. That's a 6.7% increase. In terms of other income, it's a total income. It's made up of three sub-elements, which is the local private sector, local public sector, and international sector. These sums total up to 1.016285 for the previous financial year, and this last year it was 1505983. these are the incomes that we receive from clients to undertake the work that you do for them, which is undertaking technical assessment work. The increased amount is due to, correlates directly to the increased outputs that we've had. When you have more work, then you have more income, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Other income, these are just corrections within foreign exchange, and the figure of 12,690 for the previous year, and this other last year was 175. These two amounts give a total income for the 2010-11 year of 8782333 compared to 9778965, and as I explained earlier, the increased income is due to the increased amount of volume of work. I must say that we have the international sector increasing by 489K due to increased work from international clients. In terms of expenditure, on the next slide, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the expenditure is listed there, and the remuneration, employee remuneration for 2010-2011 was 4,640,583. And increased by 6%, which is less than the increase for the grant, to 5,082,388,398. This is a modest amount for a full staff complement of an agency. Depreciation decreased slightly, 375,056 to 369,948, so there's nothing unto what can report there. And operating expenses increased from 3,535,075 to 4,424,299. The large increase is due to the increased scope of work. You more have more testing, you have more work that you need to give out to the stage. So it's directly correlates directly to the increased amount of work that you had to do, the increased amount of outputs that you achieved. So it was a good financial year in terms of total operating expenditure, increased from 8,550,714 to 9,876,645, which is a small increase. Now the finance income is the interest, which increased by from 4% to 5%, from 107,570 to 182,508. So that's the finance income is the interest income, which provides a margin of 339,189 compared to 8,488. So we did have a good financial year, I must state. In terms of contribution, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, I mentioned the Gombani project, and this project, I must say, is very close to my heart. What is it that we did in Gombani as Agrima South Africa in collaboration with the National Department of Public Works, working closely with the previous Deputy Minister for Public Works, Henrietta Bokopane Zulu? This initiative was under the auspices of the Expanded Public Works Program, and it used the development. The idea was to go to a deep rural area and make a difference where we really need to make a difference in our country. And on the next slide, you see the rural home of these women, what they were before we went there. And on the bottom right-hand slide there with the two South Africa Works because of Public Works banner is a coffee house, a transformation. The lady you see in that picture there is one of the beneficiaries. And she and all the other women in the village, the ones who built these houses with their own hands. Imagine. And this in the previous slide, I showed the brick-making process where the women actually made these blocks themselves. These blocks are made out of compressor, the soil that you have in situ in the area, with a very small percentage of cement, 7% of cement. 93% of the material is in situ soil that you pick in that local inhabitable area, in that local habitation. 7% imported material, 7% cement. The rest is a local material. The women who have never built in their lives, they have no clue about this. They were given a couple of days training and look at the results. Isn't it wonderful? Yes, this is because of Agro South Africa. And I believe it's wonderful, yeah, it is. And I believe if you can do this, repeatedly, we will not be having the strikes we're having here, because the people will be building their own houses and not going on strike because they want increased wages and need to do this more and more all over the country.
You're very much right. I was invited to that assumption by Deputy, and she also feels proud about it. So you're not boasting.
I'm not boasting. I need it.
So this is just one example, and I believe we need to do more of this. We really need to do more of this. We really need to do more of this. I'll just mention another project. These are some of the schools that we built. The tilt up construction is a very fast system. It uses very quick system. It's a system where you erect a building on the ground and lift it up in one operation. It's been in existence for 40 years and can also be used. It also promotes the use of labor, because the labor can be used to erect the material on the ground. And since it's repetitive, you don't need highly skilled labor. And we believe that three pivotal factors can ensure successful housing delivery. One, the product must be cost effective. Second, it must relate community upliftment. It's not uplifting an individual, not a entrepreneurship process, but creating community upliftment, creating entrepreneurs. It must be sustainable. Those are three pillars for creating sustainable development. I mentioned this tilt-up structure, which is about 858 and 500, about 1,350 units were built in Kalfontein, which is somewhere in Tembisa where our Honorable Minister comes from, but this was built before we were appointed the Minister, so we had no influence at all, I must say. But this is an existing, Tembisa, as you're aware, is I would call it an informal settlement, kind of, I don't know if that's the right word to use, but it's an area where they're existing houses. Now, they had to come up with these infill structures within this area, and the tilt-up structure works very well, because you could go in very back, you know, very tight spaces, and just use a crane to lift that structure which has been erected in the workshop yard, and put it up, erect it. So on the right-hand side, top right-hand side, you have you see these workers putting the doors in, and that's a wall on the ground, and then the crane lifts it, the crane on the bottom left. The picture is not too good, but it's lifting the wall, and it puts it down, and within a day you have a whole house. Isn't it wonderful? Yes, I believe so. But those are just some of the examples of the products that we've done. I mentioned the interaction with previous other public works entities, the community services we do. In Eastern Cape, we build the schools. In Mafikeng, we're going to repeat the Kombari project. I'm hoping that the Free State Bloemfontein is also going to have a similar to the Mabani project. And this is a promotion of the use of alternative business technology using rural women, and has a lot of benefits, as the Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee has just mentioned. In terms of business development, strategic positioning, the new legislation for environmental SANS 204, that's the South African National Standards 204 and 284, but XA. These are new national standards which were developed and promulgated in November 2011. And Agrima South Africa was nominated in those national standards as the agency that will do the environmental assessment. In other words, we will check the software that is used in the assessment in accordance with the national standards. That's a big role for Agrima, and we have done it successfully. So far, we have certificated two particular products which can be used to validate this environmental claim. Why do I say this? Because it is important that it's a very important strategic role that Agrima is playing, because environmentally, if you reduce the greenhouse gases and reduce energy consumption within buildings, then maybe we will not need a second Medupe power plant, because you can reduce energy consumption. It's a very important strategic role. We may not be seen in the general public, but we are playing a very vital role in the country. It's strategic in nature. It's vital because the system of Agrima works. Agrima has also fast-tracked the evaluation process within the agency by going electronic in the application and processing of information. This is an in-house business development strategy. In terms of internally on our technical work, we've done the expansion of LACT activities, and they actually provide services to the general public. As small as we are actually making a difference out there, because we have certain equipment which is not available in plenty within the country, but Agrima has that equipment. Therefore, we may not be known in the general public, but to those who need to know us, they really know us, and they're playing a key role, because we have that specialist technical assessment equipment which is available to everybody in the country. Just mention one equipment, the QSAN. It's a system which fast tracks the aging of product. You put it in this particular machine, and it simulates a 30-year lifespan
within a period of about 2 weeks. So within 2 weeks, you can be able to tell what will happen to that product if it's exposed for 30 years in the environment. Is that a wonderful equipment? Yes, Agrima has that equipment. In terms of promotion of handset technology, we do work with schools and universities and other institutions. We provide lectures to technical schools in collaboration with the National Department of Public Works. To the universities, we talk to the students. We introduce them to this innovative construction technology. I mentioned Brits University, Stellenbosch University, TUT, University of Pretoria. We invite schools to come to our institutions to see some of these wonderful products which we develop. We do have. We also do promote alternative business technologies. At the NHBRC, Eric Molob Innovation Hub, we do have a site whereby we showcase all the alternative construction technologies. There's one also in the Western Cape, in close to what's the area? Bekweni at the municipality, and we will be developing one within the Eastern Cape in the next year or so. We've worked closely with the Eastern Cape Department of Human Resources Settlements, the EPWP in Limpopo. We've interacted with them, Limpopo Local Government, Mpumalanga Innovative Building Systems, where a lot of our products have been used in that particular province. Small Builder Association, we interact with the local municipalities. We give presentations to the building control officers, so we are all over despite our small size. In terms of R&D, we sit within the National Department of Human Settlements R&D task team, and we assist them to ensure that they incorporate alternative business technologies. In terms of development of standards, we sit within the SABS, Technical Committees and Standards Generation Committee, particularly TC59, Construction Standards Committee, and SE59, which is energy efficiency and energy uses in the built environment. In terms of human resources, we have two interns, we have buses, and we also have internal experts. So we have a lot to do. Honorable members, in terms of, I just want to conclude by stating that Agrima continues to contribute to South Africa's national imperatives with technical assessment of innovative construction projects. We contribute to the triple government's key challenges of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And we believe that we are committed to service delivery and accountability in accordance with our mandate. We provide authoritative assessment of system performance, thus assuring of fitness for purpose of certificated products. I'm proud to say that Agrima products, none of them have failed in our 43 years of existence, which is quite a record to be proud of. Our certificated products can contribute to local economic stimulus. And we can contribute towards fast-tracking rural economic development, as illustrated in the previous slide. And we can lead to improvements in performance of existing products. And we can enhance the export potential of South African manufacturing products. With that, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, I thank you for the opportunity, and I'd like my Chairperson, if he has anything to say. Thank you. Oh, my colleagues.
Any addition? I don't think that there will be any addition. Whenever the CEO makes his presentation, you see passion in him. I must be honest. You listen to him saying, officials from the minister. He says, as an agency, they have done a lot, and they hope other agencies can do the same. To me, it says a lot. And I hope in the workshop that you are organizing around November, some of these things need to be quoted, and we need them maybe to give them, as Agrima South Africa, a slot for them to encourage other agencies to also do the same. There's passion in the whole thing, I must be honest. You know, there's this tendency of us talking good about a person when she is a coffin. We should say it when people are still alive. Honorable member? I can't hear, Baba.
Okay. I was saying, Chairperson, we would know where he comes from and we won't be able even to attend his funeral when he's dead because we do not know him.
But we can send messages. We can always send messages.
Other members, let's engage with the presentation. Baba Sithole will be followed by Baba Maguvani, Honorable Swate. Let me just, it can just be a man's queue. Baba Maguvani, Honorable Nguani, Honorable Swate, Honorable Madlala, and Baba Gila.
Thank you, Chair President. First of all, we must congratulate the presenter because always when he presents his report, he knows what he's talking about. But my children, what I want to know, the life cycle of this development, their development, whether in Venda, what is the life cycle of their construction, of their houses that they have constructed? The other one, Chair, is the relationship between them and the municipalities. And the municipalities, because the information that they put it here, it says several, they are not all, several national and provincial. So we don't know which municipality and provincial and national they are working with. I think they can tell the department that they are working with. And the other one, Chair, is the one of the marketing. Do they have offices in all municipalities? If they do have, where? They don't have one. That's my conclusion, Chair. Thank you very much. And that the other one, Chair, the system that they are using, did they create, is there any job that has been created through their system?
I have
one. Okay, thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presenter for the presentation. Here you can see that he's very passionate about what he's talking about. He's very confident. Yeah. But my worry has always been it looks like Agrima South Africa does a very good job, but they work in silos. That's my worry. As it is, we wouldn't be having such a backlog in housing if really they are well marketed where they are. I think because the housing is the competence of the provinces and the national, but we have got a big backlog in housing. So I think it would be good if they would go around, I don't know, the provinces advertising themselves as to this is what you are doing, and I don't think they are known in many provinces as it is now after so many years, but they are only mentioning the Komani village in Venda. I know that IDT is using their materials. Also, it's about the, I would like to know if there are any exports. Because we are working with the international countries. Do you have any exports? And if so, I think if you were really utilizing that opportunity, would be having, I mean, would we still assisting you financially? And would we still be under CSIR? Would be more independent? And if you are really this much, do you have any vacancies? Because if you are expanding, you should be having more vacancies. Do you have any more vacancies or in your staff complement? And I went through the annual report, small and big. I can see it's very, you have done a very good work. Very telling, but in some board, all these board members, they attend meetings and then they are remunerated according to the meetings they attend. I couldn't find anything in your annual report. Or is that handled by CSIR or what is happening? But otherwise, they are doing a stealing job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mugwin.
Thank you, Shapasi. And thank you very much for the presentation. I could see that the gentleman who is presenting here is really passionate about his product. And I'm happy that his product is under the Bureau standard. I want to say what Tole said, but in another way. Municipalities, do you work with the municipalities? If at all the answer is yes, does it end that because the municipalities, they control the rural people and their chiefs? Do you ever go to the chiefs and put down your product and let them know? Because at times you find that the municipalities, they can't present your product without you being there and be able to guide them. Number two, the schools that you have built, you have mentioned the place where you have built the schools. But I suspect that is the schools that you have built are in urban areas and cities, nothing in the rural areas. Because if you mention Mafeking, Bloemfontein, University of Stellenbosch, West University, Tshwane University, University of Pretoria, those are in big cities. But now the reality people are suffering are in rural areas. What is your plan about the rural people and with your good product, with you, I mean, presenting it to the rural people. Finally, are you monitoring, your product that is being run properly? If the answer is yes, how many times have you found defaults in your product whenever it has been given to the rural people, to the municipalities, to do to deal with your product, and you find that there are some faults which have been done in your product, and what steps do you take against the municipality? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, CEO, for a very good presentation. Yeah, mine actually, I actually wanted to find out, or actually I'm worried about when you, the chairperson indicated that the program of Agri must run like a program under CSIR instead of being run like an entity. So I just want to know if they actually want to to expand or to have a fully capacity to spend on its own like other entities. I just want to know maybe they are planning what they intend to do with that, in that regard. And another issue is with regard to when they are saying that they are well positioned to play a supporting role in the government, especially in the infrastructure program. Because when I see the products that they actually introduce to the market, they've actually managed to help in certain communities. But I just want to find out, are they not actually working with the municipality or other departments of government? Actually, I'm talking of this in the Eastern Cape, where we're still having a lot of mud pools. So I just want to know what are they actually intending to intervene in that regard. And also, on the issue of how they identify the rural communities, I've seen the Gomba village in Venda, and I'm seeing a lot of houses, mud houses in Limpopo. So I just want to find out maybe for you to be able to intervene in Gomba could also help in other municipalities or in other areas. So I just want to know, how did you make it happen that you helped in Gomba? And another, the other question is with regard to the buzzers, when you actually, on the slide where you actually talk of six people who you've given buzzers, I want to know where, if those people are still at that sharing institution, and if they complete, where are you going to be placed? Are you going to absorb them in Agrima, or are you going just to let them to go to other entities or other employment? So those are some of the things that I wanted to ask. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable, can I clarify? Agrima South Africa is an agency with a primary role of undertaking technical assessment and certification of non-standard construction products in South Africa. Am I wrong? They don't build schools. They don't build. Theirs is to certify material that comes in, building material, road construction material, like bituminous for road construction. That's what I know. So they don't do it because I wanted to clarify that. They only come up with material, standardized material. Theirs is to certify that this brick can be used, this servicing chemical can be used, this down one roof can be used. The roofing, the bathrooms, the bath that we use in our bathrooms, all those things are certified by Agrima South Africa. I wanted to clarify only that. Wagila.
Thank you, Chairperson, for clarifying it. I think in our last engagement, Chairperson of the Board, there were a number of issues that we raised. You will not get much of a budget. The Agrimas of Africa, but you are doing a lot. Now, have you ever thought of having a partnership? Why do I say so? Some of your products are very good, and they don't cost much. And as Honorable Newman has said, we've got this challenge of building low-cost houses. And Chairperson, we also had a challenge of our people wanting handouts. And it's one way or the other, it has to stop. Especially with young people, you go to the house for a young person. We buy, if there's a good product, you can make that person to fill his own house. They say, catch the gentleman to catch a fish, don't give him the fish. So, what I'm just saying, Chairperson of the Board, for instance, you from Eastern Cape, you know our areas, the lack of housing. Now, you won't be able to put your budget to go market yourself there, but say for instance, not that because you're at UHA, I'm just making an example, UHA or CDC, ECDC, you go display some of this brick making machinery so that people know and can buy. And you display a few bricks there so that they are able to know that there is this type of material which is very cost effective, which can help the people to build their houses. So you can think about that. That's something. Then secondly, we in a country with a shortage of skills, and our matric pass rate is not that good. Let us be open and fair. We talked about it yesterday. If you can think of a plan to encourage, especially in rural schools, the grade 6, 7, 8, or 7, 8, and so to visit your place. I've been there before. There's a lot happening there, Chambers. There's quite a lot. It can maybe change the mindset of those kids to take the technical route. You know, why some of them don't take that is because they don't know what is happening, they don't know the job opportunity. So with your limited budget, if you can just try and encourage, I'm not so worried about, yeah, global cities, I'm talking these deep rural areas. So
So that that mindset can be changed. We need that. It's very important that we have that. So those are the two things. Or else, there's really nothing much we can say. A grammar good, I've been at your place, and you know, I can just say keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. CEO. The cement that is now utilized in South Africa, it lies, the actual lifespan of a house after doing it should be plus minus 4 or 5 years. But with the cement that we are utilizing right now, the lifespan of a house deteriorates. After plastering your house, a year, 2 years down the line, your house wears off cement, the plastering cement. And you'll have to, for you, you'll have to rework it. And after that, you have to use bonding for the house not to wear off again. What are you doing about that? I know you don't have that right of interfering with other, but the products that are dumped in South Africa, especially cement, the cement is now full of lime, and it's no longer good for building those the houses that we used to build in the past. Secondly, I just want to find out from you, the butamas, is it true that South Africa is running out of butamas? We all know that butamas is a product from petrol. But if South Africa is running out of butamas, or you can't export butamas, what are the consequences when it comes to road construction? The other thing that I want to talk about is the chemical that is used for priming potholes. To say, is it the correct chemical that is now utilized in South Africa? Because when you close a pothole, you must clean the pothole. After cleaning, you prime it. And then after priming, you refill it, whether you use, what they call it, asphalt or whatever. After growing the potholes, the potholes don't last. Is it because of the method that we are using for closing the potholes, or is it because of the chemical that we are using? Whether they are also, there is also dumping of chemicals in South Africa that don't make any impact. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member and Chair. I'm going to pick one or two questions in relation to the board, and I think the operational questions the colleagues would actually deal with them. Again, thank you very much for the questions. I think the one question that perhaps is a question that generally afflicts both the public entities in general and the public sector is the concept, I think the Honourable Member raised it, of generally working in a saloon. I think that's a general difficulty. And I think Joe will reflect that. There is an extent to which we collaborate. I mean, within the board, we even have the people who are coming from the Bureau of Standards and from the NHRPRC, amongst the other entities. But I think generally, TEF is a big issue in the public sector, and who ultimately is able to gain the limelight in the event that things go well, and of course, failures are often without parent. So I would take it as an area of improvement from an opportunity point of view. To the extent that we are constrained by resources, there's a very limited engagement with the municipalities and provincial departments. So in fact, I must confess myself, I've been in the built environment for quite a few years. I've actually been in the public works stable with other entities, with the IT board and later on with this IT board. I actually didn't know that AGRIMA existed. I was actually quite surprised and I couldn't even understand why the word appears not to be English or French. And I think that's the extent to which the profile is relatively very subdued unprincipality, because this budgetary is an amount that tends to require a lot of modesty by the management team that actually works in there. Whereas other people will take their chance for nothing. These guys tend to be very technocratic and almost like below the line in their operation. So that's a major area of improvement. It's been raised in this committee before, but I think the budget is a big issue. In that area, there's also been a question of whether it should actually have physical presence on a decentralized basis. That has got a very major budgetary implication because staff, you know, the accommodation, that is the offices, and the operational elements. But also, the minute you do that, you then also need to increase the capacity to respond to that feedback that you're actually going to be getting. I'm not bending the expertise around budgetary constraints. We've always had to kind of choose as to which way do we go with the resources that we're actually given. We think one of the benefits of an independent entity would be the reconfiguration of the geographic footprint and how wide that mandate would be and the extent to which it would actually popularize the work that it actually does, at least the products that it has actually certified, so that there's a greater uptake of those particular products. There was a question around board remuneration. It's actually not covered, madam, in this particular document. It's quite, without wanting to sound quite flippant, I wouldn't be surprised that the total board fees of all the board members would be less than the board fees of one person in other boards. It's a labor of love. I think it's 2,000 or something. And about four board board meetings, so five board meetings, and the TECO, which is about another 3 months. Quite frankly, you go there because you are committed to going there. So it's very, very small, but nevertheless, I think it would be appropriate in terms of governance to actually disclose for board members what those amounts would be for the purpose of this particular committee. I don't think the person exceeds a joking, it's probably an indication. I doubt very much if it is footing. I would be quite surprised. We've been quite strict about it, and we pay in terms of, even though it's not correctly applied, but we pay in terms of the treasury regulation for entities, commissions, or that kind of thing, and I think for agreement, one that is approved by the executive authority, around 3,500 for 4,000. Just to give you an idea, our CSIR board member, the board fee for one board meeting was equivalent to five board meetings for agreement. That gives you a sense. And CSIR is one of those that pays in a very modest fashion, but nevertheless a big size. The minute you start going into these other out call SOEs like Transnet, it's a different ball game altogether. So it's a very small lay.
Sorry, naturally you didn't get any bonuses.
No, not a board. No, definitely not. No, I think from the governance point of view, we run in a relatively very clean, very clean, no performance bonus. That is something that would apply in terms of the CSIR rules to the management team. Yeah, absolutely not whatsoever. We actually don't even do business with them, just on a personal basis. And then on the question, Madam Chair, of whether GRIMA would wish to actually expand, that has been the dialogue with the department. It's more really responding to the mandate, not just expanding for the sake of it. And I think Madam Chair has raised the issue that there's an extent to which existing in the context in which agreement exists has actually constrained it, you know, because indeed, as you correctly pointed out, it is run as a program of the CSR. And because the competencies have changed to what the competencies were 40 years or so ago, you know, the global trade relations, the dumping of material, as it has correctly been pointed out, the extent to which quality assurance can be discharged at a massive scale because of these contesting challenges, it's very difficult to actually do that. So it would appear to us that it's a logical thing to do. It's a natural thing to do, that in fact, if anything, it's quite overdue. It's been an unfortunate question because that would be predating even the years so that it doesn't become an unfunded mandate. And I'm advised that there's a meeting which is in the office sometime this week between the department and the National Treasury as well. So the big thing has been the issue of where is the money going to come from. And obviously the National Treasury wanting to certify themselves that in fact this is a function that is necessary and that should be discharged and that those resources will not go to waste, if you like. But there's no doubt we believe that there's more than a fair argument as to why it should it be increased and looked at as a standalone entity. And there was a question of career promotion in the rural areas. We'll take that that particular point. And indeed, the question that has been raised around partnership. Well, often when we give the incentive to the people who are certifying, the owners, the entrepreneurs, we often ask them the extent to which they would actually engage in some particular promotion. And I think one of the constraints is that South Africa is not big on venture capital. So you often find that these are startup businesses, people who have decided to engage in some innovation process, and they actually even complain about the certification fees that we get them to pay, which are very, very, very modest. Because a startup business, and often they battle to actually get finance to get these particular businesses. They're not very keen on what I would call the strategic partnerships. They say, look, I just need to make a living. I just need to promote this thing directly with the people who are actually certifying. And one of the difficulties that we have is that what we would call your designer, manager, your consulting engineer, or your architect, who is the person who actually specifies, let's say, the house elements, are not familiar with these particular products. And often these particular consulting businesses are run like production lines. You use the same specification that has been used 50 years or so ago because it's quicker. And you're going to make your money much more quicker because you spend less time and now stick having practiced on the other side. So often you find that it's a replication of the old and the reluctance to engage with the new. And there need to be a need for the promotion of these material even from the decision makers within the particular municipalities. And most of them often you find that they are faster or they are even cheaper. And relatively stronger. So it's something that, in fact, needs to be engaged. And partnerships made with the big entities, honorable again, like your construction, big construction companies, is probably an area that we actually need to sort of focus on. Let me stop Medeshed. There were some technical questions that you asked, and later on, maybe after the management team, just comment on those particular questions around the control. Or rather, the one area around bitumen, if I could just comment, just wearing a different hat, was with an interest in the oil refinery manager from a co-corporate point of view. So it's an area that was paid a little bit more attention to. You might correct. We're finding that especially the South African economic landscape generally tend to have a monopoly industry that have entrenched themselves so much that their view has become our view, has become the South African world view, the way we actually look at things. And the petrochemical companies in particular, they tend to look at which products within their product, in fact, are more profitable. And on the basis of that, they will then concentrate on one product or another product. And bitumen is a byproduct. Is not necessarily the most profitable product because they can continue to process bitumen into something else to actually separate those particular products. So it's partly a result of what I would call a company-based objective, perhaps maybe not necessarily looking at what the impact is from a country point of view. And that's one of the issues that we think from a country point of view, the country ought to be able to sit with those companies and say, this is the agenda from a country point of view. This is what we're planning to do from an infrastructure point of view. We project that the demand for this particular product is going to be this much. We require of you to actually make sure that you produce this much. And of course, if you don't do this, we've got the regulatory power. We can do A, B, C, and D. Often we find that that particular phase is relatively very weak. Currently, the oil refinery companies need to be producing, for instance, petrol that is compliant to Euro 4, which is what is happening in other parts of the world. But South African oil refinery companies, they don't actually produce that because they're not fitted. They have old technologies. They're not fitted to do that. Instead of them using their own profit to actually upgrade their own plants, they've been asking government to recapitalize them. They were not sharing the profits, but they want to share costs of actually receiving. And as if that is not bad, instead of government taxing those particular entities for not producing petrol that reduces emissions, the tax is actually to the OEMs, the original equipment manufacturers, so the VW, Toyota, BMW. The consequence of that is that the OEMs pass the cost onto the consumer. So you have a systemic issue and a systemic gap around what is actually happening in the petrochemical industry, and bitumen is one of what I would call the symptoms and casualties of what otherwise is a very dominant industry that was actually left often by itself. If for people who are familiar with Durban, if you go around Osterfield, Wentworth area, and you look at levels of pollution in that particular community and occurrences of bronchitis because of weakness in the monitoring of air pollution and those kind of things. And I look at it from a class point of view and say the reflection of the strength of those particular entities and the reluctance of the state to assert itself in that particular environment. So I thought I may have to reflect on that. Thanks. Over to management. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Member. Thank you for the Chairperson. It's very clear and covering most of the questions. So I'll cover the questions which have not been covered. The first question from Honourable Stolle was, what is the life cycle of buildings? We still need them to last the lifespan of a building. A building should last 50 years or so. So the QSUN simulates the lifespan of that, and therefore they should last as long as a normal building would last, and they do last that long. Our relationship to the municipalities, which are the ones you're working with, I mentioned that we have made one-on-one interactions with a number of municipalities, but when all the municipalities come together to the National Convention, the Building Control Officers session, we do go and give a presentation that we interact with all municipalities. Questioning, marketing, do we have offices in all municipalities? No. We are too small to have presence in all municipalities. We have a presence in Pretoria, and we have a person, we had a person in the Western Cape, and we are looking at replacing the person, and we do have a presence in Eastern Cape in Port Elizabeth. Question, is there any job created with our system? Yes, because when somebody uses that system to build with it, he does then create jobs. I illustrated the Gombani project, and that created jobs. The question of working in silos, the chairperson has dealt with it. Why is there a backlog in housing? I think we can do what we can do to supplement the area, and maybe with the use of alternative business technologies, the housing backlog would be less. Question of going around to provinces advertising their work, the chairperson dealt with that. IGT are using our material. Are there any exports? If so, which ones? Yes, several. Habe Roofing Tile exports from the strength of an Agrima certificate. The fibers, they're used as an additive for cement, is exported to all over the world on the strength of an Agrima certificate. Lots of building systems are exported on the strength of our Agrima certificate. The road materials, we have several materials which are being exported all over. I'll just mention one particular one. You are familiar nowadays when you see Sandra resurfacing the road, they use a very thin surfacing material. That's an Agrima-approved innovative construction system developed in South Africa, exported all over the world on the strength of an Agrima South Africa certificate. Do we have any vacancies in the South Complement? Yes, we advertise them internally and externally as well. Board members attending meetings? Yes, the amount of remuneration for the last year, as the chairperson noted, is a very humble amount of 58,652 that were paid to board members last year. Total for all board members for the whole year. Then the question from Honourable Magubane and the SABS municipalities, do we work with them? I think I've covered that. Do we go to the chiefs and let them know? Not all of them, but I must say that the Gombani project was a project that was in a deeper area. Schools built, we build in urban areas, and why not rural areas? I think the confusion was on this particular slide where we talk of promotion of science and technologies, where we promote at tertiary institutions, but
schools are built by the IDT and the Department of Public Works and housing by Department of Human Settlement. And a lot of them are actually built in rural areas. The schools in the Eastern Cape, which I think the Portfolio Committee may have visited, are indeed rural areas. So yes, we do build in rural areas. Then quality management, how many faults and what steps do we take against the municipalities? The faults, yes, when you do get complaints of any misdemeanor, we immediately investigate. In actual fact, we carry out quality management assessments on all particular products at least once every year. And should there be any reason for us, should there be a complaint or any other reason, then we do send out our quality auditors to carry out independent verification exercises. And when there is a fault, we take the necessary steps to either suspend or recommend to the board the withdrawal of such a certificate, which is then published on the Government Gazette. Honourable Swart then questioned whether we run under the CLR as a program, and the chairperson has covered that. And to expand to have a fully capacity to stand on our own, that Jefferson has covered that as well. And we're well positioned to play a supporting role in government, yes, I agree. And find out whether we're working with municipalities, I think I've covered that as well, especially in Eastern Cape where we have a lot of mud schools, I think I've covered that particular question. Then there's a question, how was Gombani Village selected and how can we select other areas? Gombani Village was actually a Department of Public Works initiative using an AGMA-approved product. The selection was done, to my understanding, using a poverty index that went to the most needy of the most needy area, using selection criteria targeting the area that needs assistance the most, and that was how the selection was done. It was not done by us, it was done by an independent body. Mm-hmm. And the six bursaries, are these people still in tertiary? Yes, they are. And will we absorb them? Yes, we will, within the either AGRAMA or the greater CSR, and that's the policy which we do. So, which the CSR does support in terms of its social corporate contribution. Honourable Gather, the chairperson of the board raised in the previous meeting, have you thought about a partnership? I think the chairperson covered that and I'll not add any more. The challenge of building lots of housing, displaying this great machine in deeper areas. Yes, 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 we need to do that. And I'm happy that the ministers advisors here, and I'd like him to please, we need to develop a South Africa brick-making machine that we can take to every village in this country, that we can use it, so the women can build those houses. The women build the houses, we will develop the country, we will change this country. And I think we can do that. The matric pass rate is not very good, grade 6, 7, 8, for test ITS. We do take them out, school week where we bring in about 100 or 200 kids every day from the schools. The selection is not done by us. We approach the Department of Education, I think it's higher education, basic education, and they select the schools. They obviously mix the all different types of schools, rural schools, urban schools, pharmacy schools, and they come to our place and we take them out. We show them what they're doing. We show them the labs. We show them the testing. Some of the testing done, like the fire test, which is very spectacular, and provide them with lunch and question and answer session to stimulate their minds and encourage them to partake in this innovative system. And as a matter of fact, on Friday this week, we'll be in a show in the Eastern Cape, in KZN, where we hope to have 1,500 community people where we'll be having an exhibition in support of the Minister and the Department of Public Works. The question of cement and substandard cement, etc., needing rework, bonding leaks just to fix it. What are we doing about this? Yes, we're developing alternative business technologies. We have an application right now, certainly, for an additive to cement, which will make it stronger, more bonding, more powerful. I must state that the cement is the only building product that's covered under the National Regulator of Compulsory Specification. In other words, if you're selling cement, you must comply with the national standards, which is a compulsory specification, and that is under the ambit of the National Regulator of Compulsory Specification, the NRCS. And that is not within our mandate, and they are actually working on ensuring that all the cement in the country meets the minimum standard. But as you rightly say, some material comes in, which is sold in the back. You go to the hardware store and they say, you've got this FBS mark, but you've got this other one. It's not cement, but it can work as cement, and we'll sell it to you for 20 rand or 30 rand. So that is happening. It is not in our ambit of control, but it is working. It's happening. On the issue of bituminous the chairperson has covered that, the scarcity of conventional materials and what are the consequences. The chairperson has covered that. And chemicals used to prime portals, you must clean the portal, clean it, prime it, fill it with asphalt, and portals don't last. Is it because of the material or methodology? It could be because of either or both. But what we have done as AGMA in our role, we have developed a material which is suitable for filling portals. It's a cold mix asphalt, what's the right word, semi, cold mix asphalt, which can be used to fill portals, and it has been tested that is cold mix asphalt.
Cold, yeah.
It's not hot mix, it's cold mix. It comes in a container. It has good binding properties and can be used. But the thing is, we should not be filling portals. We should be identifying the problem before it becomes a portal and fix it or do preventative maintenance. Preventative maintenance is very cheap and very simple. You can easily, if it's a crack, you can cover the crack, or if it is an area of failure, you can fill it up before it goes and damages the sub-base, which then becomes a major problem. And whatever you do, if the sub-base is damaged, you have to go right down to fill from the bottom. You cannot just fix a top and hope it will last, not a level of work. So the challenge is to identify the problem before it becomes a problem. I mentioned the thin layer surfacing material which is used on most of the highways. It's most of the SANRAL new roads, you see them using that thin surfacing material. It's actually been used on airports for the big jumbo jets. It's an AGMA boot system, and that is why I end my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Follow up, Gail.
I think, when the presentation is done, it becomes very exciting. I just thought about the interesting about these access roads. They're using these paving bricks. I just want to check if maybe you do have the machinery for doing it. Something that can be introduced to the youth and the women in the rural areas, so that, because what we do, we go about doing the oversight in different provinces. We encourage these contractors not to buy from the advantaged to build it and all that. We encourage them to buy these paving from the small companies so that they grow something to that effect. And that's the way we try to market the small contractors, small and that. I was just thinking aloud, maybe it's the age thing, about the... If these machines and other things can be, AGRIMA could work in partnership with these FET colleges, because that's where a lot of work is done, and introduce some of your new in this material. My first question was about the paving bricks. Do you have them, or do you have the machines to do them so that it can be marketed around the country?
Baba Gaila?
No, it's just a comment, Chairperson. It doesn't need an answer. Lamin, you meet with a whole lot of these FTs and South Africans prepare yourself. You know very well. Let me talk about a place that you know. I've actually seen in one of the you didn't see me. You know, matter. There's a lot of these kids coordinated eyes that you can take and fold. There's a lot of this cement that Mama's talking about. Window frames and all that. And that cheap stuff comes from Pakistan, from Asia, to Devon Harbor, which is not properly monitored in case of Transkei. In our area, comes from Devon Harbor, which is not properly monitored. And it gets sold to these poor people. You know, these poor people, they build their own houses. You see when you go to them, those people build beautiful houses, Mama. But the type of material they sold to them. Now, can't you speak to these other entities and various standards? Please do proper monitoring. That's what the problem is. Like the bricks you're talking about, Mama, they are bricks that they pay a lot of money. You can, with your finger, to scrape the cement or So, also you need to assist, speak to, let them be proper monitoring. You were talking when you were coming to Parliament, you remember, about meat that comes, chicken that comes from overseas. You go to Jimmy's and Tata, between me and you, you see the standards sold to our poor people. The standards they brought Let us do something, because it affects the health of our people, it affects them financially. Let us work together and sort this mess up. That's all I wanted to say.
This one, I'm sharing, and nobody will call me to order. CEO, ESCOM is saying next year it's going to increase its tariffs up to, is it 100 to 100%? Something 100%. And of course you are closer to CSIR. CSIR came up with a pilot project around Manomlele Giani of generating electricity using dung, blongo, cow dung. You know about that project?
Blongo.
Yeah. It's a very good project because there's a lot of dung in the rural areas. Why are we not, I don't know, it might not be a competency. Why are we not coming with something? Well, that they do, they just dig. I mean, that way they dig hole and there are certain things that we do, set up bricks and whatever to generate that. Why are we not coming with that system to assist people in the rural areas? The second one, in Malaysia, in the rural areas, there's an NGO that goes around collecting old newspapers. Soak this newspaper in a big drum. And then thereafter, you need your newspaper. You put them in a brick shape. What do you call it?
Oven.
Not oven.
Mold.
And then you mold those newspapers. You put them on top of the rope for them to dry, and they use them for making fire. One newspaper brick, you cook for the whole family, and you can use it the whole day. Why are we not thinking about something that might assist our people in the land? You come up with this small, you know, there are this small, I remember, this small one spot, a small stove.
Yeah.
Why can't we come with better stoves? Even though Dr. Lewis can use it in Sentin, that's what you can also use it in Sentin. You have put one brick for the whole night, the whole house will be warm. Can't Agrima South Africa think about such stoves outside here, whatever, think about coming up with such stoves where people can just go around collecting newspapers, paper. At the end of the year, there's a lot of school children books scattered all around. People can go around picking up newspapers, clearing our places and creating these newspaper bricks for making fire. And you can also build houses out of those bricks. Can't we? It's just a challenge.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and quite a few points. The first one was related around the machine for the paying brick. In fact, I was engaging with the CEO for a different purpose. I was looking for these machines, for this dry stack, and I did research the hydroform, what is called the hydroform in South Africa, and in South Africa it sells for about 140,000. He ended up giving me the details. And I'm in the process of sourcing for a different personal purpose these machines from Kenya. And I'm buying this machine that I would pay 140,000 in South Africa. I'm buying it for 8,000 rand. And this is no exaggeration. And another colleague of mine who also comes from Kenya actually went there, and because I wasn't updated, I thought maybe this is not a real thing. And he went there to have a look after I actually got it from there too. But obviously there's a problem about the economic structure in South Africa in terms of the cost of these particular products. Because 140,000, which community is going to be able to put together 140,000 for something that would be 80,000? Or maybe there's an opportunity for state intervention, particularly in those things that would create an enabling environment for cooperatives, rural women, and those kind of things. But there are what I would call modular elements. In these brick machines, you can actually take the infant and put one that actually does the paving top. You can actually change it to different size, from size 6 to size 9, different shape, as well as the one that actually does the paving, but they sell it separately from the main machine. I think it's all part of making money. They are readily available on the market. There is a bit expensive, and I would agree paving tend to create more jobs than at a low level with a relatively modest skill. And collaboration with the FETs, I think that's something maybe the partners like IDT, all the other implementing agents, because they are the ones who tend to have a direct connection with the contractors who would need that material for implementing purposes. I think we take note of the points that have been raised around the alternative sources of energy, maybe from the CSR perspective, trying to nudge them to look at those particular elements. Let me just again take the opportunity, Madam Chair, and just thank the committee for the opportunity to make a presentation. The support from the Department of Public Works is greatly appreciated. They'll call our call amount to account and demonstrate that we are already performing and we are actually quite comfortable. Not so long ago, Madam Chair, I was emoting on exactly the very same point around this poor material. Poor corrugated iron, I think, with Professor Rodney Milford from the CID, and we tended to sit on different sides of the fence. The counter argument on the other side, and he's an authority, he's written handbooks on materials in the country. Sitting on the other side, the counter argument that he was presenting was, if the material like corrugated iron is imported and it's very thin, the purpose, and this is a good medical document, the purpose is not meant to be used for human habitating, that it is meant to be used for a different purpose. That regulating is not going to help, it's education, where people must be educated that mustn't use that material. But of course, we were arguing differently, and I think there was a member of this committee who was part of this particular dialogue. I think in a developing country, you must accept the fact that the literacy levels are not that very high, and also the desperation is very, very high. People just use even plastic to cover themselves. So if you give them corrugated iron, however unsuitable it is, they will have no option but to use it, but then it's going to cost them their lives. And that's where the role of the state. So it ended up being almost like a philosophical debate about how far should the state go in those types of interventions. But we take point, Madam Chair. We would love to where we can intervene, because if we've seen it, with no people have actually lost their lives through this particular element. So thank you very much for the opportunity, as well as to the management team. We're lucky as the board, Madam Chair. We just sit and we have a little commitment. And we're glad that you are sharing that, or you're witnessing that life. Thank you again, Madam Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in my area, roofing corrugated iron is made behind their warehouses. They have got these sheets of thin zinc. That's what they make. I don't know how can we stop that. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the presentation. And keep up the good work. Thank you.